Welcome to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Hope you're doing well. Hope you still got your spirits up and you are still in the mood to celebrate independence. Not for any other reason than it's just a nice day. I feel like the last weekend, the one thing that wasn't talked about was how Mother Nature must have been British. What's with this 72 degrees? 60? I had to go upstairs and get an old sweatshirt for when I was setting off Kmart fireworks in the driveway. Big weekend for me, Pete. I finally got into the fireworks game. Although yesterday, I will say, I had some leftover fireworks. And so I did, like, some smoke bombs and, like, some sparklers with my son. And then I sat outside, and it was that moment. I know Nick DiGiulio talked about it on Facebook as well, and I wholeheartedly agree with him. I'm like, this is the worst holiday ever. Like, you get to a certain point, and he's much more articulate about it than I am. But it was, you're sitting there like, oh, look, the park across the way, looks like there's a lot of festivities celebrating independence. Okay, wrap it up. Get inside. Lock the doors because it got to a certain point where you're like, this must be what Fallujah's like. It gets very Fallujah. Chicago, I'm sure the whole country does, but it very Fallujah-like.
Yeah.
Quickly.
I'm not a fan of amateur fireworks.
And it's the amateur. There's one thing to be like, oh, look, we're going to set up. But this was like the whole park. I mean, there were four different spots in the park by my house where they just let them off.
Mm-hmm.
And then one was just sound, the M80 variety.
Yeah, that's what I don't get either. Yeah, because we were out in Evanston, and yeah, we're just like enjoying the backyard at my wife's parents' house, and like in the alleyway, somebody just blew off like 190,000 firecrackers. Like, who does that entertain?
Yeah, it's got to entertain somebody because someone bought up a lot, and that's how I felt, right? I can't even imagine with your dogs the fun you had because that seemed to be all over my Facebook feed.
Yeah, it's a bad day for animals.
Do you get on social media and be like, okay, cut it out, guys?
No, I don't.
You're not that good.
No, I don't.
I saw so many of those. It was fun on the first day. Now, you guys, it's been 3 days. Cut it out. My dog is under the bed crying. If you could see my dog right now. Like, if you could see my dog.
I think it's fairly well known that most dogs hate fireworks.
Right.
I don't really feel the need to display my anger on my Facebook page. Because what's it gonna prove? You know, I think I saw Pete post on Facebook last 4th of July that
Pete hates Facebook.
His dog was very up. His dogs are very upset about the fireworks. You know, I'm gonna think twice about it now and not blow stuff up.
You're out at the the place off the expressway in Indiana, and you're like, you know what? On second thought, I saw Pete on Facebook. This really affects his dog. It was pretty crazy. I will say that where I was on Sunday night was in a cul-de-sac neighborhood in Indiana. I told you I was going to Northwest Indiana for the weekend. And it was really nice. It was nice. Everybody was very responsible. There was even one case where there was this, I've never seen a firework like this before. It was like half firework, half drone. And it was like launched over the house, and then there was like a parachute to it. And it looked like it was coming straight at you. It was going so slow, meandering down. And then it landed in the cul-de-sac. And about 15 minutes after that, like a SUV comes roaring around looking for it. Like it's straight out of like Chasing Aliens. And it like grabs it, puts it back in the car and leaves. I'm like, wow, they're even picking up their garbage, like the trash. I'm sure there was some monetary value to that. But I felt like, how respectful. They're going to go find the empty carcass of this firework, and they're going to dispose of it.
That is very respectful.
Then I come home, I flash forward to the to the Chicago experience, where I'm like, nobody's picking up any of this stuff, are they? This is just going to be a fireworks garbage display. And today, I thought it was completely hilarious that today's the day that the Chicago Park District starts their summer camps, like around the city. So you know that every kid's like, yay, what's all this? First thing today, we're going to do basketball. Second, first, clean up the fireworks. You know, every kid was doing that. So,
ugh.
anyway, great show tonight. Bill Kim's here. I'm excited to talk to him at the Bill at the big table. Bill Kim is a great chef behind Chicago staples like Urban Belly, Belly Shack, Belly Q. He's a Korean born. He was born in Seoul. He moved to Chicago at the age of 7. Talk to him about making the transition, not just to assimilate to the culture here, but to bring his own culture into the mix and essentially craft a great career in the culinary arts, which includes being chef de cuisine at Charlie Trotter's. So to think about a chef like that who goes to that level, trains at all the best places, and decides that where he's going to make his mark is in casual street food. And that's what he's doing in neighborhoods like Wicker Park, Logan Square, West Loop, and other places. So we'll talk with Bill Kim about his career and his philosophy when it comes to restaurants and food here in Chicago. Also coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Dave Perner from Soul Asylum is going to be with us. Talk to him about his great career. The Minneapolis-based band is going to be at Talia Hall on Thursday or Friday coming up this week. We'll talk with him about his show and about Soul Asylum. Some great music. Runaway Train. That's the one song I don't like, I'll be honest. I'm more of a Somebody to Shove kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great song.
That's a jam.
Maybe we'll play that a little bit later for you. You know, maybe we'll just blow out half an hour of the worst and just keep playing Somebody to Shove over and over and over. The worst is tonight. Mike Makings and Blake Burkhart are here. We're going to have the two comedians in studio. You know what's the worst? Leftover fireworks. Like, if you're on July 5th, you go downstairs and you're like, oh, man, we didn't blow these things up. Now what do? You got to hold on to them for a year?
You blow them up on the 5th.
You can't.
No?
No, I not only do I think there's some sort of statute that says you can't do that, or nothing would stop anybody from doing that all the time, but it's so passe. Like, you light a firework off on July 6th, everyone's like, not cool. Have some respect for your environment, for your neighborhood, your community. On the 4th, have at it. That's the worst. Having leftover fireworks for a year is the worst. Also coming up tonight in the 7:30, Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy. We're going to do a special touche to talk about what happened today with Careless Not Criminal, with the Hillary Clinton emails, and also talk about the legacy of Abner Mikva. All that coming up tonight. News, weather, and traffic with our main man, Rob Martier, and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right. It's a download here on 720 WG in Chicago. Big news tonight, of course, the Chicago sports teams well represented in the All-Star game. The Chicago Cubs send seven players to the Midsummer Classic. Their whole infield is heading to the starting lineup, the first time since 1963 when the Cardinals did it. How about that?
Losers.
Rizzo, Zobrist, Russell, and Bryant, not to mention Dexter Fowler in the outfield, and the two pitchers, Jake Arrieta and John Lester. On the White Sox side, only one player, Chris Sale. Todd Frazier doesn't get the nod, although he's up against a lot of great third basemen, and although he has 23-odd home runs, he's only hitting 200.
Is there any chance that he makes the team? Is there injuries or, you know, yeah, manager right. adds a player or something?
Possible. And I would think that there's also going to be that weird kind of, hey, you can vote it in.
Mm-hmm.
We're not done with you yet. We're the All-Star game. They cartooned it up. You can vote. Hi, I'm All-Star, the All-Star guy.
That's when the White Sox usually shine, though. There was for a few years in a row right, where Scott they always got it. The extra yeah, right, guy. AJ, right. I think, was one yeah, extra guy one
ridiculous.
Time. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I get the concept, but don't make me vote twice. Don't make me vote at all. Just go ahead and pick the guys. I think that's simple.
You know what's the worst? All-Star games.
This one's going to be, if you're someone made a good point saying if you're the Mets, you got to count on the Cubs to win it for you. They're like, wait a second, didn't we just sweep these guys? And now they're going to represent us against the best of the AL? No thanks. No. Good for the Cubs. That's coming up, and that's great. So the Cubs, 7 players, White Sox, 1. All right, let's get to the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper. See you at home. You don't have to. Here's today's
top stories. The FBI did not recommend prosecution for Secretary Hillary Clinton over Emailgate. They said while it was careless, it wasn't criminal. This is terrible news for the attack ads that are currently at the printer. Republicans are like, darn it! Oh, so much money spent. Can we keep it the same and just put on an asterisk? Yeah, does an asterisk sound good? Asterisk for everybody! Good. Then you cut to Hillary Clinton is a liar. Check her email. Asterisk. You know that's true. Laugh all you will, but you know that's true. Donald Trump is considering a short list of Washington insiders for his VP pick. This goes against what many thought would be a completely non-Washington ticket to play off the outsiders label. That's a bummer, too, because I was hoping it'd be Chris Christie so we could see two grown men bully each other. This weekend, Indiana Governor Mike Pence met with Trump. That would be interesting and, frankly, good for everyone in the state of Indiana. Pence isn't very popular these days. But isn't that how you get the VP nod anyway? Do a really bad job and then, hey, he'd be good for VP. 4 dead and 64 shot this holiday weekend. What's amazing about that number is that 28 of the shootings happened after the superintendent addressed the media last night. It's almost like the criminals and gang members were like, oh, he says it's under control. Let's show him. Shoot everything in sight. Terrible. 4 dead is a low number for a holiday weekend, but 64 is right up there with the last couple of years. Last year it was 10 dead and 54 shot. This isn't good because the police put a lot of officers on the street and arrested a lot of gang members on Friday night. So what caused the spike? Really, I don't know. Anybody know? I was too busy. I was shooting off fireworks, eating chips. Former Illinois Congressman and federal judge Abner Mikva died today at the age of 90. A very popular Democrat who mentored Barack Obama is also considered to be one of the last politicians who had integrity and respect for his position, i.e., he didn't go to jail. That should get him something, right? Like a name on a stadium or an expressway? Or how about a museum on the lakefront? No? Too soon? Rest in peace, Judge Mikva. American Airlines is testing out faster automated security lines. Great, so now we're going to get yelled at by robots. Take off your shoes. Take out your laptop. Sir, what is in this bottle of shampoo? Is it just shampoo? When I think of the automated security at the airport, I think Schwarzenegger in Total Recall, right? Remember that? And remember he took that homing device out of his nose? That has nothing to do with this story, but remember that? It's so visual. It's like the best acting that Arnold Schwarzenegger has ever done. Pretty cool. More dress code dust-up in the news. The popular Whirly Ball establishment on the north side denied Chance the Rapper and Entourage from entering the facilities as they violated the dress code. Chance asked to see a manager, and the bouncers reportedly said no. So Chance went to his Twitter account to express his disappointment, and he's gotten everyone's attention worldwide. Chance went on to say that Whirly Ball is, quote, inaccessible for black people or those with black friends. Whirly Ball did not comment. So for future reference, bouncers, if a rapper with a gazillion followers on Twitter wants to talk to the manager, I don't know, maybe let him? Because otherwise he's going to talk to the internet, and that's never good. It's never good. People are mad at PBS because apparently last night they celebrated the 4th with live fireworks, with past fireworks spliced in. Maybe they didn't get the numbers they needed for their last pledge drive. All we need is $10 more so we can show you live fireworks so we don't have to splice in last year. And we'll give you a tote bag. PBS was hoping to get away with it, but it was given away when they showed the crowd and everyone was wearing Lance Armstrong bracelets. Hey, that was like 5 years ago. In weather today, starting to heat up after a pretty chilly holiday weekend. I had to wear a sweatshirt when setting off cherry bombs on Sunday night. Not cool. In sports, the Cubs turned right around and lost again. The Cubs weren't very sharp, neither were the umpires, but the Cubs had a pretty down June, and now they start July 1-4. I wouldn't worry about it yet. We'll go on a 25-game win streak after the All-Star break. Speaking of 25, Chris Bryant, Roy, hit another home run today, giving him a league-leading 25 for the season. Wow. Don't look now, but the Chicago White Sox are back. They won their 4th consecutive series over the weekend, and yesterday stuck it to CC Sabathia and the Yankees, and James Shield only gave up 2 runs. What? He can do that? And he won the game? Who is this guy? The Sox are still 7.5 back, but only 2 back in the wild card. Don't worry about that right now. Just keep winning. And let's all pay attention to rookie shortstop Tim Anderson. He's playing ball right now. The Bulls were busy over the weekend, I guess, grabbing former Celtic point guard Rajon Rondo to replace Derrick Rose. That move was met with a collective meh from Bulls fans.
Rondo is a much better point guard, but he's not the greatest shooter, and he's pretty much fought with every coach he's ever had. So that's got to bode well for much-liked, well-respected coach Fred Hoiberg. So there you have it. Ready? Rondo, Butler, Lopez, Mirotic, and then the rest? Everything goes right? That's a strong seven seed. I like. Paul Gasol left the building. He's going to San Antonio. Nothing extremely memorable about his two-year career here in Chicago. And there's still word that the Bulls are not done, meaning they want to trade Taj Gibson, which seems to be like every year. That's the sports equivalent to the news story. Is mold killing you? It's like sweeps week. And finally, Taste of Chicago starts tomorrow. So if you like hot turkey legs, $9 beers, and walking around Grant Park without your shirt on, you're being paged. That's the carryout for July 5th, 2016. Hey, we only give you 200 napkins with your order. You know, climate change. Coming up, we'll talk about whether or not the emails are behind us. Probably not. Well, Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson are here to do a special touche, a Tuesday touche, here on the download. Stay with us, 720 WGN. I really liked my PBS pledge drive voice.
Yeah, really? Up here.
No one sounds like that.
Now, with a $20 pledge, you get this great mug and the handy knapsack as well. You can't look at kids' programming my kids enjoy. We watch it all day long. It's fantastic. Of course, the news programs. You just, you know what? Pick up the phone and call right now. Our call center's right behind us.
Give us a call. You heard, Rob.
Give us a call.
You heard him. 800 PBS. Rob's right.
My favorite is when Gene Honda gets up and helps out with the pledge drive because he still has the announcer voice.
Give us a call now.
If you don't call now, 2 minutes for high sticking.
How are you, Rob Martyr? Good to see you, buddy.
Good to be back. Thank
you. How was vacation?
It was nice. We were down at the happiest place on earth, Walt Disney World.
Yes.
So we had a good time.
That's good. It was a good time as you remembered it.
It was, yeah. You know, it's not much of a relaxing vacation, right, although it is an expensive one, but it's, you know, it's fun.
You know, I've done that vacation with my son, and although it is expensive, I think they do a good job down there. How was your experience overall? Did you feel like the fine folks at the greatest place on earth took care of you?
Look, once we had a few wrinkles ironed out, computer-wise, because they've got this bracelet thing you wear,
yeah, right,
and that gets you into the park, and you can also pay for everything, so it's almost like being in Vegas, there are no windows and no clocks, so you really don't know where you are.
It tells you if you've got diabetes.
Right.
It's
yeah,
got everything
right, exactly,
on it. Right.
So once we got those wrinkles ironed out, we did all right. It was a lot of fun. Right. We stayed at the Polynesian. It was fun. Yeah.
Oh, man.
There you go.
I only called the Myriad replacements Rob Martyr like seven times. I'd be like, and here's the news with Rob.
With Roger Babish.
So it's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right, you go right, you go left, you go right, you go right, you go right, you go left, you go right.
It's a special touche, usually reserved for Monday nights here on the download, but since the holiday preempted us, and it worked out in our favor because a huge bombshell today is the FBI says they don't recommend prosecution of Hillary Clinton over emails. Dave Lundy, Charles Lipson's in for Chris Roebling today, University of Chicago political science professor and a regular here on WGN. Dave, Charles, good to see you.
Good to see you, Justin.
You feeling good,
today,
Dave?
Today was a bombshell. I sat there this morning. You know, I get to my office, I turn the TV on, I have it on mute usually, and all of a sudden I look up and I see Comey press conference, and I'm like, okay. And I watched the whole thing live.
A lot of cliffhangers.
And I'm not sure I exhaled for 15 minutes.
He kept going, and even if this is the case, then here's what I want to say. Well, I'm not going to say it yet.
Right.
Like, that's what the whole flow of that. I was like, oh, you're killing me. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So you're obviously happy with the results of today's press conference.
Well, look, nobody's happy when the director of the FBI calls your presidential candidate extremely careless, okay? So please,
she
nobody.
Said it was carless. It was a misspelling. And I believe that that's her defense now.
That's good. Touche. Nobody could be happy. It wasn't right. Exactly what I would call a glowing vindication. But what it was, number one, no prosecution. And not just no prosecution of Hillary. It was the no prosecution, no recommendation for prosecution of anybody up and down the chain.
So no one can be thrown under the bus. It won't be a lawyer. It won't be a Democrat.
And it's not just going to be an ongoing matter for the next year or two or three or four. So that was one thing he said. He also said she had there was no demonstrated intent to delete things to avoid detection. People were deleting things in the normal course of action. I mean, he said some things that were difficult, but he also said some things that very much exonerated her on the subject of intent.
All right, Charles, you heard that. Dave is obviously concerned but elated, as you can hear it in his voice. He sounds giddy and energetic. On your side, is this put the email stuff to bed?
Dave, you ignorant slut. No,
you realize we're not on Patty's show. It's only 7:40 here, dude.
I'm sorry. Actually, I think that I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm not a Hillary supporter either. I'm actually right now backing the giant meteor of death as the best option.
13% in climbing.
That's right. That's right. And doing very well with independents. But and in Ohio, that's where it hopes to break through. But I think Comey, and surely Comey is an honorable man. I think that Comey,
he's the FBI,
the biggest, James Comey, I don't have anything bad to say about him. He's behaved with integrity throughout his career. I found the press conference to be a tale of two press conferences. One was a statement of facts. And those facts seem to be quite damning, and in two ways. One, they said that virtually everything that Hillary has said publicly about the emails was false, and obviously she knew it was false. And that includes things like her first thing was she never sent in classified emails. Well, there were hundreds. She never sent any that had classified markings. Well, there were some. I think that the issue of intent, which is not in the law, actually could be read a somewhat different way. Her intent began when they set up a server that she knew would carry all of her stuff. But if he thinks that it's not something that he was an experienced prosecutor, if he thinks you couldn't get a conviction.
Right.
I think the real problem, one more thing. I think the real problem here was that they let it run on to this date. At this point, there were nothing but bad options.
Right.
If he had said, we're going to put her on trial, people would rightly have said, wait a minute, this close to an election, why not let the people decide what to do? So I think he backs himself into a corner once they let it run this long.
Dave, are we going to hear second guessing and continuing disapproval of Hillary Clinton's behavior, what she said, what she did, how she defended the email stuff throughout the last year? Are we going to hear, is that going to be the rallying cry for Republicans as we move forward in this presidential election?
It will be at their own peril. Obviously, Donald Trump spent a fair bit of time on that today in a speech that he just gave. Breitbart sent out a tweet with the picture. Bill Clinton meets with Loretta Lynch, and then they didn't prosecute. No surprise. Donald Trump claims this is about a rigged system. And here's the thing, James Comey, whether you love him or hate him, aside from the fact he's a Republican and served multiple positions in multiple Republican administrations, is like the most ethical guy in Washington. So one of the reasons that I was bracing myself is I'm like, is he going to have an interpretation that somehow is even though legally he might or may not be right, whatever. Anyway, but he didn't. And today he came out and he said, no, there's no reasonable prosecutor would do this. And the thing that he said that I think is important to mention real quick is, and I also saw an interview shortly thereafter with the guy who prosecuted Petraeus. He was interviewed by Chuck Todd on MTP Daily. And he not only agreed with Comey, he said, look, there has never been a prosecution under the gross negligence standard. Normally you get prosecuted, even though the law technically does not require intent, you normally get prosecuted if you have a combination of intent and an aggravating factor.
But
and in Petraeus'
case, what
about
the intent of sort of setting up the whole system so that
it was
outside?
That's not an intent to disseminate classified information. In Petraeus' case, not only was he caught on tape, on his mistress's tapes, saying, I'm going to send you a raft of classified, and this stuff is really highly classified, he then lied to the FBI about it. That's a problem.
Let me ask you, Charles, getting out of the nuts and bolts of what we think about intent or what do we think about how the law is being, I guess, applied here. Hillary Clinton has a bad rep for being dishonest. Voters have always, Republicans like to call her a liar. Does this help or hurt her in the sense that she did go on record on this thing, as you mentioned, and some of the things were already sort of disproven or she's been caught in a lie? Does this help Republicans who are pushing against Hillary Clinton, or does this, as it says, she's not going to be prosecuted, help Democrats?
Well, it helps Democrats in that they would have been in a very difficult position if he had said we are referring this to the FBI to the Justice Department, and they would still have to make a decision, and then the Democrats would be in a hard fix. On the other hand, the Republicans, Comey said was that the factual basis for what Hillary has been saying for the past year and a half, or however long it's been since this was first discovered, all of that is false.
Nah, he didn't say that, Charles.
Huh?
He didn't say that.
He let it go the first time. No, he didn't say that she said false things. He went through a series of statements that one by one ticked off as incorrect and false statements that she had made. She said she never sent classified material. Yes, she did. She said she never sent any material that was marked classified. Yes, she did. Those were her claims.
But are you being, and critics of this being a little too specific? I mean, we're talking about classified documents. You're talking about three? I mean, it's not like a tremendous amount of ones that were marked. Ones that were marked.
There were over 100. And then there were several that were very highly classified that contained people's names and so forth. I don't think that that's what's going to resonate. Trump will try two things. Trump will say she endangered national security, and Trump will say it's a rigged system. And he'll just see which of those two stick to the wall.
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality, again, as Charles said earlier, there were only bad options here at this point for Hillary Clinton coming out of this. But what we can count on, because it happens every single time, is that Donald Trump will either overplay his hand or he will do something so incomparably stupid like tweet out a Jewish star with the words most corrupt candidate on piles of $100 bills next to a picture of Hillary Clinton that originated with right wing or with white supremacist sections of the internet.
And then defend it instead of saying, like ordinary people would, this was a mistake. It happened somewhere down the line. We're going to fire the person who is scanning right-wing websites to find this stuff.
And so all of his time over the weekend should have been spent talking about the FBI interview that Hillary Clinton did.
That's
instead, he had to defend this tweet and then or apologize for it, which, by the way, is the right answer, Donald, in case you're listening.
Right. That's exactly right, David.
Had he just said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I have a Jewish son-in-law, and my daughter is now Jewish, and I have a Jewish grandchild, and I would never do anything to defame Jews, and this was outrageous, and
nobody
I will make sure it never
nobody
happens
thinks
again.
He is anti-Semitic. It's just that he digs in on issues like this. And this was a mistake. Somebody up and down the line made it.
He's fomenting. He fomented the white supremacists. He's fomenting the anti-Semites. You know, as Michael Steele said earlier tonight on an interview, he said, well, he's trying to do everything he can to identify every vote he can get. Okay. Yeah,
and then that alienate them.
And, right. Well, right. And Charles, it has a consequence.
Let me ask this on Charles, because you know, the one thing that I'm interested in is the rap that Hillary Clinton gets for being dishonest. You hear Democrats defend her and say, "Come on, you know, this is just a witch hunt, or this is you're going after to any politician who's been in the game as long as the Clintons have will have ups and downs, or you know, they'll flip flop, or there'll be things that you can point out." What is the knock from conservative Republicans against the Clintons, specifically Hillary Clinton, that she's a liar or dishonest?
Well, there are two knocks against her. One is that they make a number of claims about her judgment. But the basic knock on the dishonesty, besides the fact that, as David Geffen, a major Hollywood figure, once said, it's not that they lie, it's that they do it so easily, he said, talking about Bill and Hillary. It's that they've become incredibly wealthy for one reason only. They have access inside the government. People don't pay Chelsea Clinton to give $75,000 lectures on diarrhea because she is the world's expert on diarrhea.
Hey, you don't know that. You are assuming something that we cannot prove, my friend.
So you think that is becoming the that's what you mean when people say
look,
you're dishonest.
If people are gonna to the average person, mm-hmm.
Right.
Paying somebody $75,000 or $200,000 for a speech is, oh my God, that's insane. They must have done something wrong. But if you know anything about the speaking circuit, and if you've booked anybody for a high-profile dinner, which I have, that is called routine. Yep. There are books and books. You could book Condi Rice for $200,000, ex-presidents. Ronald Reagan famously went to Japan and got paid $2 million to give two speeches. I mean, this is not news.
Why do they pay Henry Kissinger if they're the Chinese? They pay because they can open doors.
They pay because it's a draw.
There are two reasons.
Dinner,
that's correct.
You want to draw.
You have Mike Tyson or somebody. You have somebody who's a big name because they can hold the convention over for an extra day. And that's absolutely right. And you pay certain kinds of people because they're particularly attractive to major donors. Why do you pay Bill Clinton $16 million to be the, quote, chancellor of a for-profit university that does business in Latin America, a job that he got while his wife was the Secretary of State? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of money that sloshes through the system, and most people think that the Clinton Foundation, which was not exonerated.
Most people, that is not, you cannot say most people think. Your friends may think this,
that's
but
right.
That is so not true.
The organizations that rate charities can't even rate the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, you are getting into an area. You are getting yourself in trouble, my friend.
Let's take a break right here. Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy, they're my guests tonight on Touche, a special Tuesday edition of Touche. We come back. Let's talk Abner Mikva. Sound good? All right, stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
It's Touche on a special edition of Touche, Tuesday Touche, with Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson in for Chris Roebling. All right, guys, we've been arguing and going back and forth about the email situation today, but what does it do? The other big story was Donald Trump is vetting VP candidates, a lot of them Washington insiders. What does it say about Donald Trump's choices so far as we see Newt Gingrich? We see he had a weekend meeting with Pence, Governor Pence, right. Here in
and today he had Bob Corker, again, Senator, yep. Bob Corker on the trail, and Senator Corker was doing his best sycophant he could find. I heard that just before dinner tonight. He was saying, "Oh, you can tell somebody by the people who love them." And I had an opportunity to spend so much time with Donald Trump's family today, and they're the most wonderful, amazing people. I'm like sitting there going, like, Bob, you've got a reputation for honesty and integrity. What are you doing, man?
It's important to know when to sell those. Corker would actually be a good choice for him.
He would.
And the reason is that if you ask people what they're scared of about Trump, one area that they're scared of is international politics. Right. And Corker is a kind of stable hand there and a very competent guy. I think that a lot of the choices, the sort of standard Republican Midwest guy like Pence would be a disaster. I think if you pick a Washington insider, that might help you govern, but I think it sends exactly the wrong signal.
To the people
want to do is set this up as an insider versus outsider election.
Palin, 2016.
So what is that? Who fits that bill? Is
Trump
that
Palin.
Palin?
Oh, okay.
I think if he doesn't pick Corker, I'm not quite sure. He's got an unusual problem because most years, most people are eager to run as VP.
Oh, of course.
In this case, people are running away.
I personally really, really, really pray that the conventional wisdom now is true and that it's Newt Gingrich, because between them, they'll have 6 traditional marriages, at least 5 illegal scams or barely legal scams. I mean, a Trump Gingrich, talk about doubling down on your assets, strengths, something.
Something.
I love that idea. And he's got foreign policy
Quickly on Hillary Clinton. What does she do? Does today's news, does it scare her to the middle? Like, as Elizabeth Warren out, does she try to stay tight and conservative with her choice?
I think she doubles down on safe. Right. I think that her best chance to win and win decisively is to scare the bejesus out of people about the idea of Donald Trump with his finger on the button.
She's going to pick that blow-up doll that was in Airplane in the co-pilot seat. That's her best choice, really.
Thanks for the visual, Charles.
Dave is exactly right. She'll double down on safe and competent.
Can I get that on tape, please?
Yeah.
That could be your little bump.
Dave is exactly right.
Right.
Dave is exactly right. This has a limited expiration date. That expiration
date is
going sour right now.
All right, so as we only have 1 minute to go, I wanted to take time to talk about Abner Mikva. You knew
Abner
Judge Mikva
was a true mensch. He was one of the great people in Illinois. In fact, when they went through the state trying to find the one honest guy to put on a commission, they always, for some reason, they passed over us.
I know what that's about.
But they picked Abner Mikva. My
Every
favorite
time.
Story about Ab, who is a federal judge, highest level, the only person to serve in the Bill Clinton White House who got out in time, that sort of thing. He was the smartest guy in his class at the University of Chicago Law School. He was the head of the law review, and Harvard tried to tell them, sent a thing in the early 50s saying, "We know your school doesn't have a law review. We'll give you a cheap option to buy ours." Of course, our law review was very prominent, and he was the head of it. He sent back a note to them saying that he thought we should merge the two law reviews and use the two names, that we should use the first part of our name and the last part of their name. So theirs is the Harvard Law Review, and ours is the University of Chicago. And he thought, using the first part, it would be the University of Chicago, and the last part of their name, it would be Law Review. So that he was a wonderful man, and he will be sorely missed by all who knew him.
Well, we'll continue talking about Abner Mikva this week. I'm going to try to put some segments together to talk about him and his legacy. Right now, Dave Lundy, Charles Lipson, thanks so much for being our guest tonight. A special edition of Touche, a Tuesday Touche.
Tuesday Touche.
Thanks, guys. Well, welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight is a Chicago chef and restaurateur. Bill Kim is the man behind great Chicago mainstays like Belly Q, Belly Shack, and 2 locations of Urban Belly, the new one just in Wicker Park. His unique style of food includes his Korean background. He came here from Seoul at the age of 7 with his technical training in classic French, including work as the chef de cuisine at Charlie Trotter's. Kim has won all sorts of awards for his food, which in most cases is much more casual than you would expect from the highly trained Trotter alum. And to me,
That's what makes his work special. Bill Kim's my guest tonight at the big table. Chef Kim, good to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me, Justin.
Let's first talk about opening a new restaurant. You just in the last 2 months opened up a place, a new Urban Belly in Wicker Park. Talk about that.
Man, a lot of hard work. It took about a year and a half to find a location, and a lot of people who are close to me asked me, where would the next Urban Belly be? I said, Wicker Park, right across from Big Star. My main point, just having lunch and dinner crowd, young, up and coming, and have the people who graduate from college and be able to have Urban Belly throughout their whole entire life.
Well, I mean, that you go into the space that used to be Penny's, which mm-hmm. is a mainstay there in yeah. Wicker Park. But talk about why another Urban Belly. I mean, you've had you have Belly Shack and you have Belly Q. You have different concepts. Mm-hmm. Why the idea of creating the same concept in a different location?
The hardest thing to do in cooking is consistency and have people relate to your food. Obviously, my background is cooking in fine dining, and you usually guess what people want and, pay a hefty price to come into those restaurants. So accessibility, affordability, and also having a flavor profile that has a greater audience. And that's always been my wanting to do for my career. And, one thing I really wanted to do is come back home. I spent 10 years in the East Coast, mm-hmm. and I wanted my nephews and my parents to be able to eat the food that I kind of wish there was a restaurant when I was growing up, and for them to be able to come and not feel uncomfortable.
Well, you mentioned growing up. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about Wicker Park is that it's changed. That neighborhood has changed. How much do you know about the history of that block specifically? Right, mm-hmm. right next to you got Pierce Street, and just a little further up you've got the Busy Bee Diner was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a culinary history to that couple blocks right there.
And there is. And my wife always, she's Puerto Rican, and her mom, when she first came from Puerto Rico, she landed right in that vicinity. And every time we go someplace in Logan Square or Humboldt Park, she's like, that's where all the Puerto Ricans lived. So she constantly reminds me of the history of Logan Square, Wicker Park, Bucktown, and Humboldt Park.
Now, recent history, I mean, obviously Penny's has been there for 20-some-odd years. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that you wanted to honor Penny's because it was in the neighborhood for so long, because it was a little bit of a trailblazer. Talk about your relationship and what you're doing to honor Penny's, even though it's gone now.
Yeah. Early on in my career, I was in Evanston at Trio before Grant. So I cooked there for a year. And Penny used to come, and I met her. And funny story is, I took a very famous chef from New York. His name is Greg Koons, and mm-hmm. I took him to Penny's. Out of anywhere, this was almost 25 years ago. And he loved it, but he was in a hurry and wanted to go to Midway. But that's my history with Penny's and meeting her and cooking for her. And when we were looking into the Penny space, Penny and Gus did not want to sell to everybody. And, knowing her really made a difference.
It helped you, yeah.
Helped us.
Yeah.
Knowing the fact that there was a similar restaurant that's going to go into the same space as Penny. So there's a lot of connections that we had and similar to what she does. But obviously we're doing something that's a little bit different and of the times now.
Of the times. I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, the restaurant scene here in Chicago, and we talk about it on the show a lot, has really evolved. Not only has so much attention been brought to Chicago, but the food has evolved. Mm-hmm. And so even the idea of Penny's turning into Urban Belly, that's something that almost is in line with the way that Wicker Park and some of the neighborhoods in Chicago are going.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think more and more people get to travel. Obviously, we have the internet, so people do a lot of researching. And also people love to cook at home. And with the explosion of food TV, chefs, it's more and more, I feel like sometimes our customers know and travel a lot more than I do. And sometimes they give me the ideas to create and be able to recreate some of the dishes that I grew up with or some of the things that I see when I travel. And it's a great way to cook. And right now it's, the people call it fusion, but I really think it's a hybrid of different cultures from different parts of the world, I try to find the similar links between difference in different cultures or food product that we get from different continents.
I mean, there's let's talk more about this. Let's take a quick break, and we'll talk more about that concept, that quote-unquote fusion, and your career. My guest tonight, chef and restaurateur Bill Kim, the man behind Belly Q, Belly Shack, and Urban Belly, both locations, one in Wicker Park in the West Loop. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio at the big table is chef and restaurateur Bill Kim. He's the man behind restaurants like Belly Q, Urban Belly, both locations, Belly Shack. I mean, you have, it's almost a belly empire going on here in Chicago. Bill Kim not only opened these restaurants, but he also, worked as a chef de cuisine at Charlie Trotter's. So he's trained in classical French food. Let me ask you about, we kind of, before the break, talked about fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just start with your upbringing? You came here from Seoul at the age of 7. Talk about your Korean background and how that influences your food.
I came here when I was 7. We landed here because my aunt lived in Chicago. Nobody in our family is a chef or did anything to do with food. My parents owned a dry cleaners for 35 years, probably about 5 years ago, retired. So I had no clue what I wanted to do. Growing up in Chicago, went to grade school, high school, and I decided junior in high school, I need to find something that I'm good at or need to go to college.
Or you're going into the dry cleaning business if you're not, right.
Which I hated.
You're right.
I hated going. So I went to one of those college shows, and I saw a big wedding cake. And I'm like, what is this doing here? And it interested me because I like to work with my hands, and I just fell in love with it. So I went to a junior college in River Grove, Illinois, Triton College, and really fell in love with it. And it wasn't that difficult. You showed up to work. I mean, showed up to school. You did what you were told, follow recipes. And I'm like, hey, this could be a career that I could excel in. So.
I mean, we'll get to it, but I mean, where you've excelled is sort of going against the recipes. I mean, that's sort of your claim to fame, being able to know everything and then be able to try to do different things with it.
Yeah, it's reminiscing of my childhood. And, some of the things, we used to go to the Forest Preserve and grilled short ribs. That sparks an idea. When I was a child in Korea, street food and rice cakes, and I used to take and go to school, and there was a vendor outside, and he would have a chili broth and rice cakes thrown in there, and you pay by the piece. And that was my dinner. My mom used to get mad, but she would give me a little bit of money, and I would spend it all on rice cakes. So it was always within me, but these are recipes that I try to recreate in my head. And also, it sounds kind of nerdy, but I feel like I could collect flavor, memories, and profiles and store it in my head. And when I'm trying to create, I take those same memories or flavor profiles that I have, and it's like kind of copying, pasting what I've known throughout all the places that I worked at and see and traveled and tasted. So those are me going against the grain of, having a recipe. I don't really look at recipes. I look and talk and eat and travel. That's how we recreate.
When you came here to Chicago from Seoul, and what were some of the earliest memories about food? I mean, there wasn't that vendor on the sidewalk who had the chili broth and the rice cakes, right? What was the Korean food scene here in Chicago? What do you remember about the food that was here and offered to you when you first got here?
I think it was just in a fancier setting outside of my mom's house. You go, it's usually a banquet. It's called the tour or first birthday for a child. That's a big celebration. Mm-hmm. And it's usually somebody's graduation you go to, and it's usually a buffet or family style. So there wasn't like a culinary venture onto a Korean restaurant. It's always lots of it. And you get a kimchi stew or short ribs here and there. But it wasn't like, wow, I need to go to this Korean restaurant that is blowing my mind. It was kind of like, okay, get dressed up, go and go to a banquet, then come home and eat pizza.
Right. Well, I think of the Korean restaurants in Chicago, and I think in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been a resurgence of you know, diners who are looking for a little bit something different. You know, we've seen an uptick in Korean barbecue. Yeah. And but to me, it feels like those restaurants have always been there.
Yes.
What's attracting audiences to a more traditional classic Korean fare?
I think it's just the popularity of the Korean culture, the pop culture, right? You have K-pop, you have Korean soap operas that people love. I went to Thailand and people are like, they knew I was Korean. First thing they said, do you watch the soap opera? I was like, yo. Or Korean videos. That's the big thing with my parents' generation. So that being popular and people are going a little bit more in depth instead of just kind of scratching the surface, they're actually just going and going really deep and finding out the culture, the food styles, how to make kimchi themselves, and being able to prepare some of those items. So the resurgence is, I think, people are seeking and looking a little bit deeper into the culture and the cuisine itself.
We're talking with Bill Kim. He's the chef and restaurateur for restaurants like Belly Q, Urban Belly, both locations, and Belly Shack. We mentioned at the beginning of this segment just about the idea of fusion. And a lot of what you do, you bring in cultures from all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about your wife having, you know, being Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. and that's the that's a big thing going on at Belly Shack.
Yeah,
you say you build with flavor profiles. Talk about the flavor profiles that you use at a place like Belly Shack when you're borrowing from cultures, both your culture, Korean, and your wife's culture, Puerto Rican.
Yeah. So people think it's a Latin culture and Asian culture is very far apart, but what I try to look at, what are the commonality or something that is similar. Perfect example, a jicama. Jicama to me, in my mind, is like a water chestnut. The same kind of starchiness, textural similarities, but a jicama is available year-round in the States. And a water chestnut is available fresh maybe 1 to 2 months a year. So instead of using canned stuff, why not use fresh? If you go to Thailand, which is tropical, same thing with a lot of the Caribbean, bananas,
okay,
cilantro, cumin, a lot of tropical fruits, papaya in both countries. So, you know, it's not that hard. You just need to find and dig a little deeper and really find out that is almost the same similarities. And we try to use papaya in two different ways. You could use papaya from the Caribbean to make sorbet, or we take green papaya and make it into a pickled vegetable. Same thing with mangoes.
You make it seem so simple. Then why weren't more restaurants borrowing from or bringing those two cultures together, the Latin culture and the Asian culture?
So I work for a French chef. I won't name names, but I asked them when I was a very young cook. This was almost 30 years ago. I asked the chef, hey, chef, if you go eat at a Vietnamese or a Thai restaurant, is that ever going to come into your cooking? Is that going to influence you? And he would laugh at me and say, why would I do that? I am French. So that really...
So just like an ego kind of thing?
I think it's the inexperience of not being an expertise in that type of culture or food to kind of intimidate them and not be able to use it. But it put a light bulb in my head because I was cooking at French restaurants and here I am, grew up, speak Korean and know the food much as I can. But I'm like, I need to find the best Asian chef in the country. And by the age of 27, I decided I'm going to find that person. And she was in Philadelphia.
She was.
She was. And her name was Susanna Fu. And she really took me under her wing.
And that's
really
where you learned a lot about.
A lot. Yeah. To the point where she's like my Chinese mother and really taught me a lot about how to meld the flavors together. And knowing that I had the background of fine dining to kind of help her to understand how to run a very regimented restaurant. But her with her Taiwanese background taught me about Asian food that could be beyond what I know.
Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back and talk more. I'm fascinated about how highly technically trained you are. I mean, you were chef de cuisine at Charlie Trotter's. Yeah. You've done the French food, you know, gauntlet. You've worked in all these restaurants that most of the restaurateurs and chefs that we, you know, that are your peers are in 4-star places that, you know, it costs that much.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit more about why you choose to go a more casual route with places like Urban Belly and Belly Shack, but also Belly Q. Bill Kim is in studio with us. He's the chef and restaurateur at those places. We'll continue the conversation after the news. Stay with us. All right. More to come with Bill Kim, the chef, restaurateur. And a man who went from Charlie Trotters to casual street food here in Chicago. A little update on Chicago sports. The Cubs, of course, lost today. The White Sox, getting pounded. 5-0.
It's brutal.
It is. Tonight's brutal. String it together. There's something about the White Sox that I'm really happy that they are winning these series, but they're not sweeping the series. And I know now you start to be like, all right, come on, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. But they're losing these games, and then they're winning the rubber game, which is great. But you know they're coming off of the road trip, and they're like, good road trip, 8-4. And you're like, that's not going to cut it when you're 7.5 back. You can't have this like up and down, and that's what they've been doing. They're not even in this game. Carlos Rodon just getting beat up from the first inning on.
They've won 3 straight.
That's true.
You know, so it's...
Yeah, you're right, Rob. But they talked me off the ledge.
No. I mean, you can put 1 foot out on the ledge if you'd like. I mean, they really need to put together 4, 6, 7 straight wins.
I know, right?
That would be nice.
That would be nice. Just something... I mean, obviously, they're going to have to move... They're going to have to accelerate a little bit. And, you know, it's surprising. I mean, they only had... One all-star, Chris Sale, which is surprising when you think they were the first team to 20 wins. I think they beat the Cubs to it. They were the number one team in baseball at one point, and they had, you know, and they've gone so sour that Todd Frazier doesn't make the team with 23 home runs. Jose Abreu is actually having a pretty down year. After that, I'm not sure. Adam Eaton, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. How about Teixeira? He's batting 194.
Teixeira. He's still playing. I love watching. I out of the corner of my eye, I keep looking at the screen, and here's Alex Rodriguez. I'm like, oh, the old timers game. They're playing softball at the Cell.
That's right. It's the senior tour.
They're playing a senior tour over here. All right. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio at the big table here, Bill Kim. He's a chef and restaurateur behind places like Belly Q, Belly Shack, and Urban Belly, which is both in the West Loop and Wicker Park. Before the break, we were just talking about, you know, your training. I mean, it was one thing to go to Triton College and get interested in food, but it's another to become the chef de cuisine at Charlie Trotter's, to work in Trio, to work at the restaurants on the East Coast that you spent so much time at. Talk about when you got serious and started to train at such a high level.
After Triton College, I got my butt kicked at a no-name restaurant in Oak Park. And I was so embarrassed for myself.
What do you mean butt kicked? What do you...
Like, people were bossing me around. I just didn't get it. And I was a dishwasher and a lunchtime cook. And they're just like, you just do this. And I said, you know what? I need more training. So I went to Kendall College in Evanston and really said, I'm never going to look back on my career and say, what if? So I decided then I'm going to work for the best chefs in the country. That's what I decided.
How does one do that? I mean, even going to Kendall College, when you're at Kendall College, how do you say, I'm going to work for the best? Hi, I'm Bill Kim. Can I come work for you?
I just outworked everybody. I snuck into classes that I didn't belong to. I took a taxidermy class that I had no right to take. I just went in there because I wanted to do it. I washed dishes during the classes, and I snuck into upperclassmen classes because I just wanted to learn. And I just want to be a vacuum cleaner. Then I saw the Great Chefs of Chicago book. And I said, I want to work for at least 2 of these guys. And I did.
So talk about, you know, making that transition to working in those kitchens. Even before Chef de Cuisine, when you first got into a kitchen with now a little bit of training under your belt, what did you do? What was the aesthetic that you brought? The same kind of thing, like bust your ass kind of thing?
That's basically it. In fine dining, you just have to stand out. Either by being talented. You know, people say you're naturally talented. I don't know if you have that. You just have to work like a madman and be able to pick up anything that's involved in food, read it, eat it, and go to it. And that's what we did I didn't know that until I got to Trotters in 1993.
When you got to Trotters, I mean, in 1993, Charlie Trotters was the restaurant in Chicago. There was not like it is now where there's Trip Over, a fine dining restaurant now here in Chicago. But talk about that. I mean, that was sort of a destination. And there's been so many great stories about working for Charlie Trotters.
First of all, I didn't know who he was, honestly.
You didn't?
I just had somebody that I knew that worked there, recommended a place. There was a place, Gordon's, I went to, and Carlos. And both the chefs from there, I asked them, if you were me, who was young, single, and just hungry to learn, they both pointed at Trotters. I was like, okay, I'll go there. And after 1 year, he opened up Las Vegas. He wrote the cookbook. Then all hell broke loose, and I was just riding the wave, and I was just lucky to be there, and he saw something in me. He took me under his wing. We traveled all through Europe. We did a demo in Veuve Clicquot in Reims. He took me to 3-star Michelin places, and here I am, 26, owning one suit. One, not even a suit, a jacket. Suit, jacket, and he's like, that's not going to be enough. So here he is taking me everywhere around the world, showing me things, and being young and impressible really laid the foundation for myself.
What did you learn from Charlie?
Dedication. One thing that I still take this day very seriously is giving back, giving yourself, and it goes beyond just the restaurant. Everybody thinks a restaurant is involved in food, but to me, and Charlie has taught me, it's about people and what you could do with the knowledge that you have and affect people's lives in a different way.
Why not stay in the fine dining arena? I mean, Belly Q, I want to sell Belly Q short because it's still in the fine dining arena, but Urban Belly, Belly Shack, they're not places that usually a chef de cuisine who worked with Charlie Trotter are going to open. Why go casual?
I think with my background, it's the obvious thing to do. But the challenge is to be who I am as a person. You know, me and my wife, we never get dressed up. We go to eat at casual places. It's the thing that I wanted to do on my day off, to go to a casual spot. We always said when we opened up the first Urban Belly, we want cooks, chefs, and people who love food to come to our restaurant. And that's what everybody kind of wants anyways, right? So I said, it's going to be about food, and it's going to be about service. You know, and back then, it was BYOB, free parking, and nothing was over $13. And have delicious food, and how can you complain about that?
I think, you know, I asked a question a little bit earlier about the resurgence of Korean barbecue. Mm-hmm. Do you see a Korean Chicago audience or diner coming to Urban Belly? Are you attracting an indigenous Korean population to your food?
I think there are some that come, but honestly, our food is meant to be for everybody. It's not an Asian palate, American palate. This is what I wanted as a child. When a Korean-born immigrant comes, trying to assimilate to the culture of the States, and you're trying to forget one language and trying to assimilate to another, so you're stuck. So basically, Urban Belly, Belly Shack, and Belly Q is my childhood, and I wanted these restaurants as a child, and there wasn't any, so it's a good representation of where we wanted to be and where we wanted to go. So it's the perfect combination of Asian, Latin, Vietnamese, Thailand, a barbecue, a noodle, dumplings, and rice, sandwiches, street food. So it's grown up. 2016, this is the way I think Asian food should be represented in Chicago.
For you, I mean, to open up a new Urban Belly in Wicker Park to add to your restaurant collection, you talked about, you know, how you got here by working like a madman. Do you see yourself slowing down at all? I mean, you're adding restaurants, so I don't know how that's possible. But I mean, has your work ethic? I want to say that it's changed because that could sound like it's, you know, like something that's negative. But have you learned to balance life and being in the kitchen as you get older?
I do. I mean, my wife would say no, but I try to stop it right after I leave. Obviously, it doesn't always work out, but it's not about me. it's really about the people actually work in our kitchen. A kid like the chef at Urban Belly. So we had him when he was 21. He knew absolutely nothing about Asian food. After 6 years later, he's running our kitchen. So it's about him. It's about the chef de cuisine at Belly Q trying to embrace him and teach him. And they're the ones who are taking the next step. I just try to talk to them and inspire them. And they're the ones who really make the restaurant go. And our general managers, our servers, all the people. We have a dumpling lady that's been with us 9 years. She makes 10,000 pieces of dumpling [S2] Wow. [S1] A week. We have a person, her name is Connie, and she makes all the steamed buns for the restaurant. So I have the idea sometimes that we collaborate with others at the restaurant, and we do it together as a team. And that goes back to working at Trotter. It's all about teamwork. It's not about one individual. It's about collaborating with the people that want to inspire and get better.
You mentioned just a couple minutes ago about the idea that this is the kind of restaurant, and Urban Belly is the kind of restaurant you wanted as a kid. Being that kid who came here when you were 7 years old and now having a legacy, the idea that these are restaurants that, you know, we're talking about here on WGN Radio, but we're not the first to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Urban Belly is a very successful restaurant in Chicago, as well as Belly Q and Belly Shack. How does it make you feel to be a kid who came here at 7 years old and to be have an actual legacy in the city of Chicago?
I don't know if it's legacy. I'm very proud of it. It's a dream come true. I've never thought I was going to do this to have any kind of popularity. It was means to have a job. When we opened up, my wife and I said, we're going to jump off a cliff. We opened up 2008, and we just kind of rolled the dice, and she says, we will do this together, and we will jump, and hopefully things will go fine. And our very, very first customer was Monica Ng. And our third customer was Steve Dolinsky. So
those are good two people to have as your first three customers.
That with the internet and everything just came together with my sister-in-law helping us design it, creating the logo. So it's always been about teamwork. We did it together. You know, that's what we take pride in. We didn't do it to be popular or to do something that, you know, nobody else was doing. We wanted that. We wanted the challenge of doing something that's very different. I mean, 20 plus years in fine dining counter service, I had no idea what to do, but I wanted it. I wanted a noodle restaurant or a dumpling restaurant, you know, special. I took a trip to Japan, 10 days just out of the blue, and I'm just going to go. And all I did, eat ramen for 10 days in Japan, just flying around and just understanding the culture, knowing what my Korean background was, and got to go to Thailand, got to go to China, and really set my roots and said, this is what I want to do.
Bill Kim is the chef and restaurateur behind Belly Q, Belly Shack, and the two locations of Urban Belly. Chef Kim, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for being my guest on the Big Table.
Thank you.
This is a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks to Bill Kim for being in studio with us. Talk about his restaurant empire. Well, you know, ABC7's got a big report out tonight. I saw it hitting Twitter just a second ago about the sticker shock that all Cook County residents are waking up to today. Saturday, everybody got their bill for the next tax bill. And it's in some cases, as they were talking about in this piece, I read it online. It's egregious. People are down already protesting. They're in front of the tax appeal already saying, I'm not paying this. In some cases, triple the amount they were paying before. I guess this makes our next segment pretty appropriate. We were going to, you know, Barry Sterner is here from Townstone Financial, and we're really going to talk about how the mortgage or the interest rates and all of the finances are doing sort of, you know, against what happened in Europe, meaning this is a good time for refinances. Again, when last time you were here, Barry, that's all we talked about was, you know, you better do it now. But now it seems like it's loosened up because of what's happened in Europe. But today's news just has to be, I mean, it has to be something that your clients and other people are saying, oh, man, I got to do something to save some money here.
Well, it's not only them, but what about us? You know, you were out of town this weekend, you said, and I opened up the bill on Saturday. I live in the wonderful, booming South Loop of Chicago, which has the highest, supposedly has the highest increase. I'm like you. I'm reading the paper. I'm reading the Tribune, and I'm watching the news. 13% up in the South Loop. Our building on Randolph Street, I only peeked at it this morning, as I told you. I didn't look, but I know it's almost doubled in 5 years. And that's on top of what's going to happen now that they just passed their wonderful budget there in
Springfield. Right.
But, you know, the real problem that's going to happen here, other than everybody should refinance now so that we can save you some money because rates are at four-year lows. The 10-year bond was at 1.37 when I left this afternoon, which I believe was a new record.
Before we move on, why is that? Why is that a four-year low? That's what I never understand about that. I am a layman when it comes to the markets, to the financial industry. Why four-year low right now?
Well, you know, I was sitting here about 2 weeks ago and sitting where you were Steve Bertrand. And being the worldly guy that he is, unlike I, and I guess unlike you too, he was talking to me about BREEAX. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, you know, I've read about it in Barron's, wink, wink. And, you know, my Wall Street Journal, when I looked through it, and he said, watch out, bear. And I walked out and I went back and I Googled it. And I started reading more and more about it because, you know, who knows? Who cared? What's going on in London? If I go out there, it'll be cheaper is all I knew because the pound was going down.
Right.
Not that I've been to London 1 day or 2 days of my whole life. But anyway, the bottom line is uncertainty. Let's talk about that. That's the way the financial markets work. And when uncertainty happens in the world, people go to safety. And when they go to safety, they buy things that they feel safe owning. Gold, for instance, is making new highs. I don't know why you'd want to buy gold, but you feel that if you own gold, it's not going to disappear. You could put it under your bed if you really wanted to. You know, you could put it in your teeth. Some people have it. You could wear it. You have your gold. The other thing is the United States is a safe haven. So when you're seeing these also, we talk about these bombings that are happening in Saudi Arabia. There's unrest all over the place. I mean, we've had something obviously happen here in Orlando that makes people uncomfortable about the world. They go and buy safety. They buy U.S. bonds,
right.
10-year notes.
And last time we talked, if I remember, that's what the mortgage the mortgage rate is based on.
Is based, absolutely. Right. Last time we were talking about what was happening in China. The things were happening in China that people were making people nervous there. They thought their economy was going down. They thought they had a bubble in real estate. You know, whatever things that they were uncertain about, hey, let's go to the U.S. It's safe. We buy the 10-year bond. We're going to get paid back. We really don't have to go worry about them going bankrupt because they can print money. The Federal Reserve can. So that's really what's happening. People are taking their money, whether it be from stock markets in Europe, whether it be the stock market here in the U.S.
Right,
when it goes down.
Of course.
They have to park their money somewhere. When they buy a bond, it lowers mortgage rates, which helps all of us in the state of Illinois and Cook County, because our taxes are going so high.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me ask you, because does the U.S. housing market and the U.S. government, do they like that? Do they like when their interest rates are low, or are they chomping at the bit to get those higher?
That's a really interesting question, because when housing, generally speaking, and I did my year and a half of economics at University of Illinois. I'm sure my professors there remember me for that year and a half. Very boring subject, economics. But I believe that part of the engine of the U.S., that when housing is doing well, I mean, let's think about housing. Housing is buying furniture. Housing is buying drapes. Housing is painting your house. Housing is adding additions.
Bulk purchases.
Yeah, well, even fixing up your outside of your house, Home Depot, Lowe's, all those different stocks. I mean, there's a million things that you do for your house to fix it up. So I really, truly believe that, you know, that they're not unhappy that housing is getting better with lower interest rates. More people are purchasing, more people are refinancing. Don't forget, when you refinance your house, and I should say my phone number this time because last time I didn't, 312-896-2110, call me. I will give you a no-cost refinance and I'll go through the numbers for you. And my point is that when you refinance your house, who's really losing? Your servicer is losing because they're losing that bond and somebody else is getting it. But you just created cash flow Because if your payment goes down $50, $100, what are you going to do with that money? Obviously, I guess you could go buy gold and, right, and wear it, but that's still helping the economy. So, refinancing does add, I think, to the economic engine. What it does for GDP and, you know, the whole thing and getting into those semantics, I don't know. But for the average person, and I just refinanced here in July, so I think I saved about $40 a month. That's $40 more that my wife's going to spend.
So what, I mean, for when we talked in, around that time, I think it was the springtime. That was sort of like, you better do it now before the rates go up because of the uncertainty.
How wrong I was.
Well, not just you, the whole market, trust me. Because, you know, the reason we had that conversation is because I was getting seeing so many different times, so many emails and phone calls that were like, you got to do it now. And I was asking
why.
They
sent you a FedEx, remember,
right,
before I came
right,
in.
Exactly.
I remember.
So it didn't change. Here we are again. And it's actually lower, or at least at the same level. So
at
really,
least a quarter lower than last time I was here.
It's
maybe
unbelievable
three
to think about that, that it's a quarter lower than that time where everybody, the banks, everybody was trying to get refis. That's crazy.
Right. We are at the lowest that we've been since, I think, 2011. I might be a year off, or it might be 12 because I'm losing track as I get older. But, you know, if you have not looked to refinance, it's really time to take a look, see what you can do to save money. I mean, I hate to say this again, but rates won't be here forever. Doing a no-cost refinance, even if you're paying some closing costs, if you're staying in your house a long time and you could save $20, $30, $40, $50 a month and you have to pay a couple grand to do that because you want an ultra-low rate on a 15 or 30-year fix, it's going to pay off in the end. And let's get to the part that we were talking about, which is really, it's important for people to understand. So you got your tax bill and you're escrowing your taxes and insurance right now, mm-hmm, and you say to yourself, when is that going to hit me?
Right. I haven't yet gotten the red alarm bells from my account. So what's happening?
So your bill is going to be paid by your servicer if you're escrowing in August 1st, if you're here in Cook County. But you are not going to see this pain until about November. That's the time that they send you that little letter that you get that's about 5 pages that most everybody throws out because it's got 100 little things on it. But this year, don't throw it out. Take a look at it because it's going to have two little boxes there. And one's going to say lump sum payment that they're going to want from you. And one's going to say a monthly addition to your mortgage. And that's going to be the difference between how much you're currently paying, which is lower than your new tax bill.
It's amazing, too, because it's going to be the financial industry, the mortgage industry, that is going to almost give opportunity to people to offset the cost that the government, the municipality, is going to be heaping on top.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the question. That's why we have all these people talking about politics right now, because the problem that we have throughout the United States, and not just Illinois, is pensions. I mean, let's be honest, you know, people are living longer. You could talk about this ad nauseum. I mean, we do a lot of loans for teachers. And teachers get to retire at a certain age and they get great pensions. And obviously they teach our children. But with interest rates this low, and it's an interesting dynamic, like you were saying, OK, interest rates are low and that's great for mortgages and that's great for us. But that's terrible for the pension funds, because if they're investing your money and they're only making this tiny return, then how are they supposed to pay you out when you're retiring?
Right.
That seems to be the
such an interesting
the big problem.
Yin and yang. Yeah, I got to learn more about the one thing I heard in one of your spots earlier in the week was this idea that you can, you know, a lot of times when I've refied in my life, and when I refi, I always seem to reset at 30 year. Right? I always am like, okay, I'm back to 30 year, and part of me it's psychological because it's only been a couple of years, not going to make that much difference. But I mean, the idea in what you talked about was this concept of
customizing,
being able to refi where you were at, or not having to go back and reset yourself at 30 or whatever.
You know, we
at.
Talk about that all the time, because what really happens, and you know, if you have an extra dollar, you're generally not sending it to your mortgage company. I could talk to you all day and say, well, your payment right now is $1,000. It's going down to $900. Keep making the $1,000 and you'll pay it back even faster.
Right.
But when that bill comes and you go online or whatever it happens to be, you're paying $900.
Right.
Very few people can say, I'm going to pay extra this
right,
month.
Right.
It's very difficult to
especially now with the taxes. But God, yeah.
Exactly. So all that we try to tell people right now is that if you have 28 years left, if you have 27 years left, if you have a 15 and now you only have 11 year, we can do the mortgage for 11 years. We can do the mortgage for 28 years. So you're not restarting at 30. And it's just a great thing that helps
that's
the
good.
People out.
All right. Barry Sterner from Townstone Financial. Where can they get a hold of you?
312-896-2110 or go to townstone.com.
All right. Barry, thanks for being here.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest has been in music for 35 years. He's produced 11 albums, most of them with his rock and roll band, Soul Asylum.
Hello, speak up. Is there somebody there? These hang-ups are getting me down. In a world frozen over with overexposure, let's talk it over. Let's go out and paint the town. I'm waiting by the phone.
Soul Asylum and Dave Perner just put out a new album called Change of Fortune. The band has seen a lot of lineups over the years, but lead singer and guitar player Dave Perner has been there for all of it. Runaway Train, Somebody to Shove, Black Gold, and that whole Grave Dancers Union album from 1992 ranks up there with some of the greatest rock and roll records of all time. Soul Asylum will be at Talia Hall on July 9th, and Dave Perner joins me now. Dave, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Hey, Justin, thank you, man.
You come through Chicago, I would assume, you know, all the years with Soul Asylum and even before that. Talk about your visits to Chicago. What do you like about coming to Chicago?
What don't I like about coming to Chicago? I love Chicago because it's, you know, I'm from Minnesota, and I spent some time living in L.A., and I spent some time living in New York. Then I moved to New Orleans for the last 15 mm-hmm. years. I've never lived in Chicago, but I've always wanted to. It seems like a great city in the Midwest, which is like Minneapolis, only a lot bigger.
Well, I mean, you've played all types of venues here. You've played outdoor festivals, you know, you've played the indoor metro, those kind of places, Talia Hall. Talk about your relationship with the Chicago audience, because this town has supported Soul Asylum for so many years. And every time Soul Asylum shows up, you know, in a summer festival or anything, it just seems like everybody, it just pops up everywhere. Everyone talks about Soul Asylum coming through. Talk about your memories of playing big and small shows here in town.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a Midwestern lineage. We've been playing Chicago for 35 years, and every time we come back, there's some new people and some people that we recognize from back in the day, and it's really fun. I mean, we started out playing in all the worst clubs in town, and we played all kinds of clubs that aren't open anymore, and then we graduated up to, you know, the Cubby Bear or something. We play those street festivals, and those are always really fun, and yeah, I had fun at those before I started playing at them. And, you know, as long as y'all will keep having us, we love coming there and playing. It's, I don't know, maybe it's a Midwestern thing. I'm not really sure, but it certainly is a great music town. There's no doubt about that.
You guys were much more of a punk rock aesthetic when Soul Asylum started in the 80s, early 80s, when you were launched, even with different bands before it was Soul Asylum. At that time, when you were coming through Chicago in the 80s, even before the mm-hmm. Soul Asylum that hit the charts, what do you remember about playing punk music here in town when you guys would come through at the time?
Well, I think the first thing that came to my mind was Articles of Faith, and that was a band that we made fast friends with, and they had a house called Big Blue, and it was just a big blue house where bands stayed and where their whole band was kind of set up, and they had a bar around the corner called the Church of 1,000 Liquors, or that's what we called it anyway, and it was really fun. I mean, it was back in the day where we didn't get hotels and we'd stay at people's houses. And whenever we came to Chicago, Articles of Faith would put us up, and we just raised hell the whole time we were in town. And it was always really chaotic and really funny and really fun. And that's kind of who took us in first. So I think I owe Articles of Faith a big thank you for their hospitality. They're still around. I still run into them when I'm in Chicago, one dude or the other. I think their singer is a professor at Harvard now. So there you go.
Oh, there you go.
Big Bondi.
The music, I mean, making a transition from the punk music scene that you guys were a part of in the 80s to the music of Soul Asylum that kind of went mainstream, it was almost when you introduced the acoustic guitar. Talk about how your music changed when you guys got to the Grave Dancers Union part of your career.
Well, we got signed to A&M Records, and we made two records for A&M, and that was before people used the expression alternative. So back in the day, it was alternative to what the record label focused on. It just meant we kind of were in the ghetto of the major labels. And I think somewhere after the second A&M record, we were on tour, and it was just getting to be such a grind. We had a gig with Jane's Addiction, and at that point, I had just played a show in Colorado, and my ears were all messed up, kind of like the dude in AC/DC or something. I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And I guess the doctor said, man, you got to chill out on all that super loud volume. You're playing in a tiny basement with that airplane level decibels.
Yeah.
And you gotta be a little more careful when you're hanging around those big loud amps and big loud drums and stuff. And at that point, I was like, well, maybe I should try the acoustic guitar. And I took a little time off and I started writing on the acoustic guitar. And that kind of was the genesis of the Grave Dancers record. So, yeah, I mean, it was a thing where, you know, I thought acoustic guitars were kind of, you know, for wusses or something. And then, I'd also realized that I just spent quite a bit of my last 5 or 10 years listening to people like Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie. And I'm like, I like this kind of music. So I think it sort of took a little bit of a turn towards folk music, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of related the folk aesthetic to the punk aesthetic in a way. It's kind of music for the people, by the people. And that's why I moved to New Orleans, because I thought that the street music was also had the same sort of aesthetic, which is kind of like everybody is part of the show and it's not a rock star trip or whatever the heck it is. And I think that that's kind of where that record comes from. I mean, our newest record, I'm kind of back to electric all right. the time. And there's not a lot of sort of acoustic folky stuff on the new record. So it is also just kind of changing the pasta and mixing things up to keep it interesting. And at the time Grave Dancers came out, I think the punk rock thing had gotten to a point where I thought it was punk rock to sort of be, you know, really not punk rock. That seemed like the most punk rock thing to do. So
that is pure punk rock, right?
Right. So I don't know. Out of all that, it was a good thing for me as a writer, and it was a good thing for the band as far as just showing that we're versatile and showing that every song is not the same, and just showing that we can more than just play the same 3-chord punk songs all day long. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but. Yeah, I moved to New Orleans to be part of a different sort of a scene where, you know, it was really more based in jazz music and stuff. And that also just kind of keeps me stimulated as far as what music has to offer and what I have to offer it. And I think you got to kind of stretch out to keep it interesting. And so far it's working.
We're talking with Dave Perner from Soul Asylum. They're playing Talia Hall on July 9th. That is interesting about influence and inspiration as a musician. I mean, moving to New Orleans, and you've mentioned a couple times now, how has that helped you evolve and mature as a musician?
Well, I think that the punk aesthetic thing plays a part in that, because it was so much like we hate you and you hate us and everybody hates everybody. And yeah, the main emotion was always anger. And, well, it worked pretty good. I mean, it's really fun to be pissed off, and there's a cathartic nature to it, to really just going out there with your fists out. And when I got to New Orleans, it seemed like everybody was smiling, and the music was supposed to make you happy, and it was a relief from all the things that we were complaining about in punk rock. And that really appealed to me, to see all these musicians smiling and playing and making this sort of joyous noise. And it really kind of helped me grow up a little bit, I think. And, you know, the other thing is that they were just incredible musicians, you know, coming from a jazz sort of an angle. They just had all these different ideas about how it all works together. And I was still watching 4-piece bands. It was just bebop instead of punk rock. And it certainly wasn't anything other than intimate and musical and, you know, not a lot of star tripping, but musicians that I hadn't been around my whole life, but really incredible musicians. And that really appealed to me. And I always kind of feel like a rock dude in a jazz town or whatever. I don't know. It's just sort of something to get your ears tweaked to the possibilities. And you know, I thought maybe I'd end up being a jazz guitar player, but obviously that hasn't happened. But I think I learned some new chords along the way and things like that.
You could do the Spinal Tap, the freeform jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Soul Asylum's freeform jazz odyssey, right.
I'm working on it.
Well, with Change of Fortune, a new record. I mean, it's been interesting, Soul Asylum, since the 90s, which really was when you guys took off with the records and really made it into mainstream pop music. But you've taken your time in doing records. There was a time where you took some years off, obviously the death of your bandmate, but also, you know, just changing of the lineups. There's been space between. Is that a good thing for a musician to take some years off to reflect or to get away and come back at it fresh?
I'd kind of call it a period of reckoning or something, trying to figure out, look how far we've come and look how far we're still trying to go and all those kind of where are we and what are we doing this for and all that kind of stuff where you're really questioning the validity of what it is you're doing. It's just when someone dies in your band, yeah. you're pretty much thinking, the band is done. So we were just kind of wondering what was going to happen next. And at some point after Carl died, Tommy Stinson from The Replacements stepped forward and said, well, I'll play with you guys. And that was kind of, Carl loved Tommy and this, that, and the other thing. So that made us feel like we could carry on. And we went back out and everything was kind of new and old and starting over. And just these kind of events tend to, really make you step back and go, God, I mean, can we go on without Carl, or can we go on without whoever is, you know, questioning the same thing we're always questioning about and then going, why am I doing this? And going, I'd rather stay home. And that's just a natural aesthetic in rock music. I mean, you gotta be kind of crazy to keep doing it. And the survivors are the people that are the most serious about it or that love it the most or just can't get away from it. And you see a lot of the crew people and stuff, they'll quit and try to make a life at home, and it's like an ex-con trying to get a job like everybody. So they go back out to the road, and now I'm back with my tour manager, who said he was going to quit about 15 years ago, and so I didn't have anybody to take the band to Canada, and we're back together for the first time and 15 years, and he's been going out ever since then, but he keeps trying to quit, you know.
Dave, when you think about it, I mean, 35 years as a musician, I mean, you've worked as an artist, as a musician. This is your full-time job. Talk about how hard that is to accomplish. There's so many artists, there's so many musicians, people in their craft and their skill that want to make a career out of their art. For you, for Soul Asylum, for all of it, to continue and have this kind of track record, to put new music out 35 years later, what's the secret?
Being crazy, having a sense of humor, and just real, I call them the three P's, passion, patience, and persistence, and just really kind of keeping your nose to the grindstone and not really worrying about some of the outside forces that are, you know, always kind of challenging you to stand down. You know, it's just kind of people have kids, and then that becomes an issue, and this, that, and the other thing is happening. But, you know, it's always kind of been my dream, and I never really thought that I could pull it off. I don't really feel like I'm, like, hanging on to it reluctantly or anything like that. It still feels like it's progressing, and the new record is real progressive as far as the lineage of how many records we've made. But, yeah, I mean, my marriage fell apart, and things like that happen. And, you know, it's not as cool when you're not 18 to be behaving like a crazy person in a rock band. I mean, it's, you know, people grow up, which is kind of, you know, it's life. It's also people grow out of music and stuff. And that's just never going to happen to me. I mean, I know that when you're younger, you go through a period where, you know, you think maybe, man, music is awesome, I'm into it. And then and I don't know what happens, you know. Still kind of a great thing to be a part of. And I'm still kind of living a dream. I don't know if it's the dream, but I still really love doing it. And I'm just sort of thankful to be able to continue on, you know.
Dave Perner is the man behind Soul Asylum. The new record is Change of Fortune, which is a great record. It really is a great piece of work, and it reminds me of the Soul Asylum that we all fell in love with. Dave Perner will be, and Soul Asylum will be, on stage at Talia Hall on July 9th in Pilsen. Dave, thanks so much for taking some time out, and good luck with the tour.
Thank you, fellas. We'll see you in Chicago.
Pete, I feel like it's music overload when it comes to Chicago right now. Brian Noonan was talking about this weekend. He went and saw two shows. He saw at Summerfest, I think it was Indigo Girls saw at Summerfest.
Yeah.
And then he saw Def Leppard down at Tinley Park.
Mm-hmm.
He had Guns N' Roses over the weekend, which is at the Soldier Field.
Yeah.
All the great Facebook lives of the screens from the nosebleeds. And someone, I did see a bunch of Facebook posts. We were talking about this on Friday night. A bunch of people said that the second to last, they did Knocking on Heaven's Door towards the end. That was like their last song.
Mm. Yeah. No?
I don't like it.
It wasn't their last song.
What was their last song?
I think it was like Sweet Child of Mine Yeah, it was one of the bigger ones. Not that Knocking on Heaven's Door wasn't that big, but
well, you heard Noonan. He said that the second encore for Def Leppard, they just came out and thanked people. They didn't even play. They're at that point where they're like, "Hey, hello, do you want to get rocked, Tinley Park? We'll have a good time doing so. We're out with Def Leppard." You're like, "Nah," but I mean, Taste of Chicago starts on Wednesday. Awesome. The Roots will be here on Wednesday night. Just announced today that Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment, our guest on Friday night,
mm-hmm.
be joined by Chance the Rapper.
How about that?
He is going to be a part of that show. He tweeted out today he'll be at the Taste, 5 o'clock tomorrow. We should go down tomorrow.
I was thinking about that, yeah.
I didn't think about that. I guess we're on at 7. We're usually working at 5, but maybe we can. If I can get VIP treatment, it's like side stage.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. Donnie, it's Justin.
He was in here for an hour.
I interviewed you on Friday. Can I get one of those waters? No.
I was looking at, the story that you mentioned, the carryout about Chance having some difficulty and his crew had getting into the whirly ball. And then I saw that they went out to some other game type place in the Elmhurst or something. And Chance had tweeted a picture about it. Or of it that, you know, thanks to Sky Zone for, you know, welcoming us or whatever. And I was trying to look at the picture to see if maybe Donnie Trumpet was part of his crew. Right. I was thinking, oh, like he was here and then he went over to Whirly Ball, didn't get in.
Had his hot hat on sideways. And they're like, no sideways ass here at Whirly Ball. This is an esteemed bumper car meets lacrosse establishment. No sideboard hats and no wool sweatpants. Come on. I mean, I Whirly Ball can do whatever they want to do with their. And we had a nice outing there, WGN, nice outing, nice place.
I've
never played. We dominated. Yeah, it was a strong game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the idea that they're like, I don't like these untied gym shoes and these sideways hats. You kids, get out of here. And it's Chance the Rapper with like 79 million Twitter followers. He just writes, Whirly Ball sucks. Everyone's like, yeah, and up rocks. It's like, we got to write a story about this. You know that's what happened. Do you see what do we got here Monday morning? What do we got Tuesday? We saw Chance tweeted. It's just like a tweet report. What did this star? This star just did a bunch of emojis and said they love their audience. Here's a good one. Chance the Rapper said he hates Whirly Ball. Well, get on it. I need 500 words on that. That's what media has become, right? We'll talk more about that because I saw today, and I was a head scratcher, that the a woman who worked for People magazine, she wrote a letter, an I Quit letter, where she pretty much called out a bunch of celebrities for being jerks in her time as a People magazine celebrity journalist.
Mm.
But the problem I had with it was that she wrote a book about being a celebrity journalist and how much she hated it. So it's like, it's almost like a promo. Her hate letter to People magazine was a promo for her book. And I was also like, did you not understand the social contract that you entered by becoming a writer for People magazine? That you would have to talk to George Clooney, he's probably a jerk. You know what I mean? Like, at a certain point, you're like, did you not recognize that? I feel like that it was all in. Now I just gave away. That was going to be a half hour of talk. I just did it in 2 minutes. Just nailed it, Rob. You see that?
I think anybody who's getting paid to be a journalist to cover entertainment
right.
should just be quiet and cover entertainment.
She was like, there was something like someone was handsy. I forgot who was handsy. Somebody was mean. Someone was cold.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody hurt her feelings. So it was a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, it was like covering celebrities when celebrities are doing stuff they didn't want to do. That's what your book should be called. Covering celebrities when they don't want to be celebrities.
You know, journalists used to have hard bark, smoke, drink,
right.
not really give a crap about anybody. What has happened to journalism? Got a lot of shrinking violets out there,
that's
man.
Right.
I got to tell you.
Well, that's my next job. I'm covering celebrities. I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy with the poster in the background, you know, at the hotel room. Was like, tell me about your movie. And then just be that guy. What do you think?
Yeah, you could do it.
Like, work for Us Weekly. If Us Weekly's listening, I'll start at the bottom. I'll review books.
You know what? I want to be the used car salesman of journalist of entertainment journalism. I want to be Mario Lopez.
We should do a muckraker kind of like celebrity blog out of Chicago. We have no access to Hollywood, but all we do is like methinks, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, oh, did we overhear? And all it is like what we read on celebrity blogs. Really great. All right, let's take a break. News coming up here. Coming up, we're going to play the worst here on the download in 720 WGN. Mike Makings and Blake Burkhart here in studio tonight to help us. 312-981-7200. Oh, wow. We got some good stuff. We got a pair of tickets to give away. This is, of course, the worst is where we complain about all the things that are terrible in the society for prizes. And these are great prizes. Pete came through tonight. Listen to this. Third place is going to get you a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Second place is going to get you a pair of tickets to Air Supply with Blood, Sweat, and Tears at River Edge in Aurora. That's coming up in July. And first place is going to get you a pair of tickets to the 9th Annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton, July 15th through the 17th. How great is that? Do we get tickets to that? Blackhawks convention?
I think so.
We should do something from there. I mean, obviously, I think, well, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Do something on the weekend.
Right. But how great is that? That's a great number one. What's the worst? The worst is when someone does a lane change in front of me. Here, Blackhawks tickets.
No, we demand a little bit better than that.
We demand excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Excellence. Anyway, we'll be playing at 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200. Right now, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about the 4th of July weekend comes and goes, and then you feel like they try to bury the news, you know, on a Friday and a Saturday.
Right.
There's always that kind of stuff where you're like, Cheryl Swoops resigned, or she was fired at Loyola University, Chicago.
Yeah.
I'd love to have been able to break that down. Amazing story about a coach where there were a lot of questions at the beginning about what her style of coaching was because she'd never coached before and why so many students, college students, decided to either quit
mm-hmm.
or not or transfer to a different school. I mean, I think it was something like 12 or 15 players or something like that.
Yeah.
And so everyone was like, oh, there's, you know, there was like some questions about abuse. It just turns out she's just a pretty crappy coach who didn't do a good job of communicating and, you know, working with her kids.
She was actually going to come on.
I know.
Or like I,
yeah,
you know,
right.
a couple of, I mean, it was.
This was in the spring.
Right. Yeah, like I had reached out to their people about having her come on, you know, if she was just I think it was just around the announcement of the NBA Hall of Fame announcement.
And she and that was and wrapping up that season. Like
and
the,
then you know, I come from a Texas Tech family, so she she looms large in our family, and so
really.
Yeah,
because any athlete that played at Texas Tech,
Your Wes Welkers.
is Texas Tech the Red Raiders?
Yeah,
and that's when they had some trouble with that coach, and some abuse stuff at the coach,
like Leach.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
there's some weird stuff they were doing there. When like it was like a couple of students came out and were like, I don't like the way that like the lights were shut off, and I was like. Beat in a chair.
Yeah, and it was with the guy from ESPN who was a running Craig Collins. He's the producer of the
I know he's Craig James.
Yeah,
the New England running back.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, I don't remember what happened with that. So we'll move on to a different topic.
So they were like, yeah. So they were like, oh yeah, let's get this set up. You know, she'll be happy to come in. And then I don't know, like a week or so went by. And I'm like, boy, I haven't heard any. But let me follow up. And he just, like, the person, the PR person, just said, like, things are crazy here. I'll see what I can do. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Why are they so crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, 2 days later, I see a big story about how, you know, there's some accusations about her.
Well, she's out. And, I mean, it's pretty amazing, too, to think about because, you know, WNBA Hall of Famer. You know, she's a Hall of Fame basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of fanfare or media about her being in town, being the coach. That's why we were like, oh, it'd be great to talk to her.
Yeah.
But obviously didn't work out. That was a quick turnaround. The other big story, sports story at least, Rajon Rondo replaces Derrick Rose.
Yeah, how are you feeling about that?
I've always liked Rondo. I understand the media backlash because essentially he's replacing Derrick Rose, so you're not sure why. I mean, I guess the money is different, but it's, you know, what are you getting that you didn't already have with Derrick Rose with Rajon Rondo? And he's somewhat petulant. He's got a bad track record with coaches, which you know what? I don't really care about. I'm not a sports fan who's like, well, what's he like with the coach?
Mm-hmm.
I really hope he gets along with his teammates. I mean, you know, one of my favorite players of all time is Dennis Rodman. You know, he didn't get along with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. For Rajon Rondo, what I'm interested in is, I always think when an athlete comes to town, is the athlete going to be someone who, you know, takes advantage of the fact that they're in the big market of Chicago? Like if they're in the third largest market in the NBA, can they come into town and get all the endorsements? Can they win over the fans? Can they embrace playing in the city? Or do they isolate themselves? And we've seen that with some athletes. We're like, I don't care. Like when Ben Wallace came to town with the Bulls, you were like, oh, he can be a star here.
Yeah.
He never really felt himself to be a Chicagoan. Mm-hmm. He never really cared. He was always a Piston. He always even talked about longingly about wanting to go back. You're like, that just seems like a waste. So that's my concern with Rajon Rondo. Do you get a point guard who, you know, it's fine. You know, he's going to win some games, lose some games. Who's genuinely going to embody Chicago? Is he going to be a Chicagoan? Or is he going to be like, I just want to get back to wherever I was? Or I'm a rent-a-player. That's what I'm here for. Don't care. Don't care. I'm not signing your stuff, little boy. Don't care.
It'll be interesting to see. That's
because he could, I mean, it could be his team. Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler says all the right things right now. Right, he's a kid from Marquette, and he went on. I thought that was funny. He went on the ESPN shows and talked about this is his team now, and I think it's so fun watching smarter people than I on social media talk about, you know, like to make fun of the fact that if you really like selfish players with bad attitudes and torn ACLs, Rajon Rondo, he's your guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny how many comments are like that, but a lot of Bulls fans upset.
Yeah.
They don't like the move.
Yeah, I haven't seen.
What's your take?
I haven't seen many, or if any, I don't think, Bulls fans that are, and people that follow the team a lot more closely than I do. I didn't like it when I first saw it come, like Friday night. I think there was the rumors, and then, you know, Saturday or something, Sunday I saw officially come by, or maybe yesterday, I don't know. I was like, yeah, why do they have him? He's an old guy, has some injuries, like.
You just traded Derrick Rose,
to get Rajon Rondo.
I didn't understand.
Yeah, and Chicago, I mean, we spent a lot of our time, at least the early time with Derrick Rose, defeating Rajon Rondo. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something about that kind of mentality that Rose, it was almost like he was John Starks in a way. Rondo, when he was on those Celtics teams and when the Bulls went to that 7-game series, Rondo was the enemy. Even more than Pierce and Garnett, they were like, oh, Rondo was the one. He's just a little bit, hey, he's a little dirty. You know, he's just always got that look. So I don't know, maybe he plays, I mean, someone just texted in assists. Rondo's got 800 assists. That's pretty crazy. And you think about Derrick Rose is not an assist point guard. So maybe let me play devil's advocate for all the angry Bulls fans. What if, and I'm not saying, but what if the problem with your big shooters, Mirotić, McDermott, Snell, there's a couple others I'm missing, you know, Aaron Brooks, guys who they're pure shooters. McDermott's supposed to score 30 points. What if the problem was that no one's giving them the ball? And I don't mean that in come on. The idea being that when they got the ball, they're in inappropriate places to shoot the
position,
basketball.
Yeah.
Because the point guard is not really truly a point guard. The point guard is a shooting guard in a point guard's body and wants to shoot. So they're not a good. So if Rajon Rondo knows how to play the point and he's assisting and he's able to hit the guys in stride when they're shooting the ball, will we see better performances out of the shooting guards, Jimmy Butler included?
Yeah,
I mean that's what think about Paul Pierce. I mean his whole career was made off of hitting those threes and jumpers and getting the ball from Rajon Rondo. So I mean, maybe there's something there.
And they, I mean they needed a player for that position.
The other thing,
and
that, yeah.
Gar Foreman was saying it's like we're retooling,
right.
We're not rebuilding. So I mean, this kind of falls right into their thinking, where they're not just gonna get, they're just putting all young guys in, or they need a veteran who has proven, you know, he's an all-star. I mean,
yeah, he is, and you know, he's coming off an ACL too, so he's seen better years. But maybe he's returning. The other thing I would say too, I didn't know this, and I read a little bit more about, you know, the basketball as we know it with the new salary cap, is when they jack the salary cap up, which is what we're seeing in the NBA, that's why all these players are getting such big money. This is a negotiation between the National Basketball Association and the players, and they created a salary cap so they'll get paid. They'll get a better percentage of what the NBA is making. Well, one of the provisions in the contract for that I didn't know is that if the salary cap goes up, the floor goes up, because they're afraid that certain teams, Chicago Bulls, are not going to pay players, so they'll just play rookies, and they'll have their payroll will be $3 million, mm-hmm. and they'll all save money. No, there's a cap. Like a low cap too, and so the Bulls were like one of the only teams that were close to that cap because they only have on the books one contract, and that's Jimmy Butler. Everybody else doesn't get paid. It's amazing to look down and be like, geez, there was only one before Rondo, it was Butler, that was in the teens.
Jeez.
Everybody else was getting less. So you think about the Golden State Warriors. They're at the top end. Curry, now Durant, Draymond Green, even Klay Thompson. They're getting paid. Dallas Mavericks always pay their guys. Houston Rockets always pay their guys. Lakers are going to pay their guys. Knicks are now going to be up on the top with Noah got $18 million.
Mm-hmm.
Gasol got a ton of money. So there is almost like a need. They had to bring in a guy who's going to get paid $12 million,
mm-hmm.
like to hit the minimum. Yeah. So if you're going to look for a rental player, you know, you need a point guard.
Yeah.
You fix it up. So anyway, we'll take a break. We'll be back in a second. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Pete, you're in Milwaukee, huh? That was how you celebrated the 4th?
I was. It was great.
Why in Milwaukee?
We just like to go there every now and again.
Oh, yeah?
See, yeah. It's a good place to visit. Quick trip. Get away from all the craziness.
Did you go to the bar where you got to have a password?
No, there is one.
Yeah.
There's a bar.
I only know my brother-in-law once told me about it. You go up there and you have to do like it's like a cocktail bar, but you got to do like a password.
Is it Bryant's?
I don't know.
It's like one of the oldest cocktail bars. It's on our list. We didn't make it over there.
You go and they're like, what's the password? And you're like, I don't know what the password is. And they go, well, then you got to do a hula hoop. And then they do it and on the closed circuit camera, and everyone can watch the people acting a fool to get into the bar.
No, I'm not going to do that.
That's what I was hoping you did. So we got
some video of that. No, what I did do is on Saturday. So we went up Saturday, and we go to, we get up there at around noon, just had some lunch. Then we go to this wonderful beer garden, Esterbrook Beer Garden. It's great. And then we're going to go out to dinner, and we were like, oh, let's go to watch the Cubs game for an hour, you know, before dinner. We get to the bar, watch the Cubs game, and I get ready to take my money out to pay, and lost my credit card.
What do you mean? It's not in your wallet?
It's not. I don't have a wallet. This is.
Should you have like a loose credit card in your pocket?
I just have. Yeah, just. I don't like. I don't like the bulk of a wallet messing.
Oh, I got such a bulky wallet. It's like Costanza.
Okay. In the last 3 weeks, I've lost a Venture card. Gone. I've lost, and I haven't lost anything.
Do you have somebody who's just following you around? And so I was like, "Hey, Pete," and then you're like, "Oh my God, my card's gone." So maybe someone's pinpointing you.
I may be target.
Ah, you lost your credit card. You didn't find it?
No.
Oh, did you cancel it on?
Well, I called like the last place we had been, and they're like, "No, we don't. We it's not there." So yeah, to call and cancel
man,
it.
That
so
sucks.
Yeah, and then I lost $20. Molly sent me in on Aaron. And Aaron gave me $20 to run it, and then I realized I lost the money. I get there, and I'm like, I don't have any money. Where did my $20 go? I don't know what's happening to me. Like, I'm losing things. Things are just falling out of my pocket.
Download Nation. When's your birthday, Pete?
January.
All right, so coming up here in July, we need to give Pete a half birthday. Why don't somebody send in a wallet, a Velcro wallet, like a thinning one? Like, there's got to be, like, out of the sharper image or something where it's just like a cool, thinning wallet that Pete can put his credit card and $20 in so he doesn't keep losing it.
Yeah. Do you think that, my wife was like, you know, why don't you have a wallet? Yeah. Grown men have wallets. Yeah. And I was like,
You're going to show up at your house tomorrow, and I'm going to be there, and Molly's going to be there. Now that we're going to have an intervention that as a grown man, you need to have a wallet. You need to at least have a money clip or something to put all this stuff in. You can't be loose pocketing this stuff.
I used to have a money clip, but then the cards would, I don't know, I didn't like the way it was configured. Things would flap around, and one credit card's vertical, the other one's horizontal. The money's all cattywampus.
So you thought that the solution is just, I'll put my credit card in my left pocket, and I'll put my money in my right pocket? Wow.
Well, I think that's what it is. I usually have my credit cards and all that kind of stuff in my right pocket, my phone in my left. And then sometimes I, you know, when I'm not paying attention, I'll put my phone in my right.
It up. And then when you pull it out, it yanks it all out. Right.
Yep.
There has to be somewhere along the line, maybe a Shark Tank convention, that deals with that friction. When you pull your phone, for guys, you pull your phone out of your front pocket and it takes everything with you. Mm-hmm. And I've had that, I've lost cash where I'm like, well, I thought I had a $10 bill. And I'm like, oh, rant. So that's what's happening to your credit cards. So that's probably what's happening. You pull your phone out and it rips everything out. You're not paying attention.
Yeah. Idiot. Oh, it's such it's the worst feeling.
Yeah, you gotta fix it. The bar's called the Safe House.
Oh,
815,
Safe House.
Just let us know. Yeah.
All right, I'll put it on the list.
Well, they're not going to let you in because you don't have an ID.
I have an ID. I just don't have a credit. I can't pay for anything.
You can't pay. You're like, here comes walletless Joe, walletless Pete.
Don't you know what I mean, though? Like carrying a big, bulky wallet around?
Yeah, I know, but there's other ways. I mean, you know, do a paper wallet or something, just something that keeps that like tight in your. Because like the one thing about the phone is it's not going to yank the wallet out.
Yeah,
you know. I don't know.
I would keep the wallet in the back pocket. You know, I'm not going to keep the wallet.
You put it in the front pocket.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What are you from the suburbs? What's the matter with you?
Well, yeah, you're from the suburbs.
No, you put the wallet in the front pocket. You
really?
Don't want people trying to get that thing out of your back pocket.
What about my comb? Was that a back pocket? Or
you can put your comb in your back pocket. No, you don't want to do that. You got to have wallet goes in the front pocket. That's a no-brainer.
All right.
Because you're going to be more sensitive to someone pickpocketing close to your junk. And then you're like, ah, gotcha. In the back, you're like, no, you can. That's just kind of like the buttocks is the fatty part. You're like, I don't care what touches that. You know? So I think that's why. I don't know. I think that's the science behind it. I could be wrong. It's the worst. Oh, my favorite.
Tuesday night here on the download. So excited to complain about the worst things in society for prizes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got great prizes tonight. Mike, Burke, you're going to love this, okay? Listen to this. We've got tickets to Air Supply.
Wow.
Yeah, no big deal.
No.
With Blood, Sweat, and Tears opening up for them. This is on July 16th.
What year is it?
This is 2016, man. That's what makes it so good.
I love
if
it.
You went and saw this in like, yeah, if you went to 1981, you'd be like, eh, those has-beens. 2016, you're like, yeah.
Still doing it, huh?
A MyPillow. So you can get a pillow. If you come up with one of the top three worsts tonight, you get a pillow. How cool is that?
Those pillows are supposed to be fantastic.
Well, more, I mean, just the idea that you're like, yeah, I call into a radio show and I text in that I didn't like, you know, lane changes and I got a pillow. That's pretty cool, right?
I got a nice pillow out of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And the number one prize tonight, a pair of tickets to the 9th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good
right?
time.
That's a good prize.
Mike yeah. Makings.
What's
Blake
up?
Burkhart in studio. How are you guys? Good to see you. Mike's open. He is hosting the open mic on Wednesday nights at the Comedy Bar. He's also got a couple other hosts. Jobs coming up here at the Comedy Bar in July. Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, man.
How
good
are you?
Good to see you. I am well. Thank
good.
You for having me again.
Blake, good to see you, my friend. Burke. I don't know why am
That's
I calling
a nickname
you Blake?
Of sorts. Yeah. Is it?
It's all right.
You can call me Burke.
Yeah, we'll call you Burke. Okay. Comedians You Should Know. That's a good show every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock at Timothy O'Toole's over here right at Fairbanks in Ontario. And going to be at Andorka's Comedy Review every second Friday. At 8 o'clock, that's in Dorcas in Pilsen. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, great to be
all
here.
All right, let's get to it. And, of course, Pete Zimmerman is here. He usually starts us off. He's already on the phone. People are calling in. So why don't we start with text real quick. 414 says, the worst is when my coworker called my new hot rod the midlife crisis mobile.
That's a very personal worst.
So like it's the worst, man. I bought this Corvette.
Yeah,
not having a midlife crisis.
It's a rude neighbor. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, Pete Zimmerman is free. I want Pete to start us off tonight, as always. Pete, how are you?
I'm great.
Good.
Do you know what the worst is?
What's
you
the
know
worst?
What's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Logging in.
Right. That's so true.
Logging in
any
is the
situation,
worst.
And when you have to log in.
Now that I, you know, if you hadn't heard the, I lost my credit card. And my credit card, of course, is now attached to things.
Right.
So sure. Now today I'm all day trying to, what is my Ventra password?
Yep.
I have no idea what that is.
I just went through that. My credit card expired. And I swear I have so many accounts linked to nothing. Where I'm like, what's your account? I don't know what my account is. What's your username? I don't know what my username is. None of this stuff works. So I'm just going to let it expire, see what happens.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, what do you got?
Well, this one's a good one for Chicago. I think the worst is seeing Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah in Knicks hats.
Oh, that is the worst. That's terrible. And the Noah Instagram. Did you see that
the
one?
Selfie?
Where he's got a selfie and the Knicks hat on.
Yeah.
That was one where I was like, all right, man,
all
enough.
Right.
This is I'm going to unfollow this dude. The worst is following an athlete on Instagram. It's kind of the worst. I have a great Joakim Noah story real quick.
Sweet.
And I don't know if it's real. It's one of these. It's like the Jay Cutler don't care. Ever heard that one?
No.
That's a good one, too. We'll go over that one. There's always urban myths when it comes to these athletes because they party where they play, that kind of thing. So there was one time where someone told me that they went up to a party at Joakim Noah's condo in Chicago somewhere.
Yeah.
And the two women came in, and he goes, hey, you guys got booze? And they're like, oh, are we supposed to stop at the liquor store? And he's like, no, do you have booze? Like, boyfriends. I'm like, that's kind of awesome. I'm like, that's the Joakim Noah
that's great.
That I've heard. So now he's not here, I can tell people. Right?
There's Carlos Boozer on the team at that time.
You got booze? Yeah, he's in the back.
Yeah, Boozer's with us. Yeah,
yeah we got one booze.
All right, Blake, what do you got?
Well, funny enough, I had that was my number one too. So I'll skip to another one. I don't like the Bulls in the rebuilding mode. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. John Rondo.
But I'll skip to a holiday relevant one. The worst for me is the guy that shows up at the barbecue and immediately thinks he can take over the grill. Like he's got all this experience. Oh, it doesn't matter. He's at someone else's home. And I same goes for the guy taking over the music too.
Right. Right.
Don't touch that.
Don't touch that. That's
permission. Yeah. That's permission.
Who would do that? I'm not a big fan of anyone. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I've shown up at someone's party and been like, "Yo, let me take over the music."
No. Right. It's their party. It's their music.
And it's somewhat of a burden, right? I mean, it's a little bit like, I mean, I guess if that's what you do, if you're a DJ or something, you would do that.
I think people just think their taste is better than the host, or they think they can grill better than the grill master. And it's like, just wait your turn.
Just wait your
know
turn.
Your role.
Know your role. Yeah. Barbecue.
Sit
down and
know your role.
Right.
Eat the burger.
Eat the burger. Yeah. That also goes along with some of the, there's a good one that's in 312. Hold on 1 second. So much that just came in, I got bounced out. That's the worst.
Got to log back in.
I got to log back in. all right, just the boss one. All right, here we go. 847 says, when you're trying to sleep, when your neighbor is blowing off fireworks a day late, when yesterday they were quiet.
The 5th of July fireworks.
That's the worst, right?
Yeah.
That's the worst. Like, if you're blowing off fireworks now, like tonight, like, that's when you call the cops. Like, that's when the cops are like, well, at least we're past the weekend. You know, we're past that overtime stuff. We got to go. But who's saving fireworks?
Why didn't you shoot them all off yesterday?
Right.
It was the 4th of July. That's when you shoot off all your fireworks.
If you, for some reason, had one that was in your shoe or something like that, you got to throw it in a drawer and it's got to stay till the next year.
Next year.
Or till Labor Day. Or when the next time.
At least. At least Labor Day.
Something where it's an approved federal holiday and not a state holiday. It's got to be a federal holiday.
Right.
No Pulaski Day fireworks.
Can't think Pulaski Day. I don't even think you can do an Arbor Day. Maybe an Arbor Day to spend. But come on. You can't do that, right? Yeah,
absolutely
it's a war.
Not.
You can't be shooting off fireworks today.
No. Seems like you should get in trouble today. I'm with you.
I mean, just by like moral code.
Right.
Forget about the cops for a second. Just the moral code that says you can't shoot off fireworks a day late.
Love thy neighbor.
Right. Yeah. All right, Pete. 312-981-7200. Let's get a phone call in. Kathy, what's the worst, Kathy?
When you're on crutches and you're in the bathroom and you really have to go. And somebody able-bodied walks out of the handicap stall.
Ooh.
Oh.
Jeez.
That's never good. Anytime. That's never good.
Did they have a stutter? Like that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode?
Stutter step, no.
No. No, that is bad, Kathy. Thanks for that. I'm not sure that...
If you're just on crutches, are you truly handicapped?
You just hurt. That's a good point. Right.
Yeah.
I mean... Unless there's like a lot that goes into going to the bathroom, maybe.
Right.
It's like a crutches thing that's more like you're disabled as opposed to I broke my ankle.
Right. No big deal.
No big deal. But I guess I'm with you. It's debatable.
Debatable.
It's debatable. Yeah. A new segment on Wednesdays. Debatable.
Debatable.
We're gonna, Mike Makings, Blake Burkhardt, they're my guests tonight here on the Worst. 312-981-7200. We're complaining about things in society for prizes. Stay with us. It's the Down Low. We're playing the Worst here on Tuesday night. 312-981-7200. In studio with me, Blake Burkhardt and Mike Makings. Blake, you can find at the Comedians You Should Know, which is every Wednesday at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Great show.
We got a great show tomorrow if people
what do you
are
got?
Free. I'm making my debut there. Our good friend of me and Mike's, Jason Melton, is making his debut on the show.
All right.
We have Chastity Washington, Adam Burke, who I know has been on the show a lot.
Right.
And just a bunch of hilarious comedians.
That's
Danny Callis hosts. It's a great show.
We're always on the air, but I've heard great things about that show. So, also, you can check him out at Andorka's Comedy Review every second Friday at 8 o'clock at Andorka's in Pilsen. Mike Makings hosts the open mic at the Comedy Bar.
Yes, sir.
In downtown Chicago every Wednesday night. He's also a regular here on The Worst. 312-981-7200. Let's do the calls, then we'll do the text. How about that? Let's go to Ted. Ted, what's the worst, Ted?
Yeah, the worst is when you're driving alongside one of the little ladies and she has those weird dark sunglasses on and she veers over into your lane. No turn signal, no nothing.
Yep.
You have to slam on your brakes or whatever.
That is the worst. Bad drivers around you are the worst. Thanks for that, Ted.
Haven't we already been over the changing lanes thing?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Changing lanes are the worst. Let's go to Roseanne. Roseanne, what's the worst, Roseanne?
The worst is when you lose your money and your wallet in Wisconsin, and you come home and you tell your friends, and they tell you about the phone wallet.
The phone wallet. Oh, you mean what I did to Pete?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's true.
So he doesn't find out about it until after he has to experience the tragedy.
Well, you know what? Guys don't usually share their wallet situations with each other. No. It's not something that I'm usually asking other guys. Yeah. Hey, you wear a wallet? What's your wallet situation? Your front pocket?
What kind of wallet are you packing?
I had no idea that he was essentially free carding it over there. So, but that's good. That's good. I'll remember that. Thanks, Roseanne. It is true. I don't know if you guys caught that, but Pete doesn't have a wallet. And he complains he just lost his credit card. And I'm like, well, would you lose your wallet? He's like, no, I don't have a wallet. I just have a loose credit card in my pocket.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to lose your wallet.
Yeah.
Because when you put your phone in, you pull your phone out, it pulls everything out of the pocket.
It pulls everything out.
Right. All right. 708 says, the worst is when you sit through the movie credits for a post-credit scene and there isn't one. That's so true. That's so true. That's one of my favorites right there. That to me is a front runner. There have been many a time where I'm three quarters through with my son, and I'm like, "They ain't gonna do nothing in this movie, man." We're just not, when you get to the point where they're doing the song credits, you're like, "They ain't gonna do nothing."
It's over.
Marvel ruined it.
I feel like Marvel's the only one who does it, right?
I think so, and I think that you just lose track of that. Any movie you're like, it's gonna have it on there.
Yeah.
And Star Wars was one where I remember we're watching Force Awakens, and I'm like, "They're not gonna do it." And my son was like, "Yeah, they are." You know, he's 7 or 8 years old. I'm like, they're not. And I'm like, so we sat through the whole thing all the way to like the Dolby, you know, stuff at the end. Yeah. And it's nothing there. And I'm like, all right, see?
It just goes to a blue screen. Come on.
All right. All right. I don't even know what half these are. The worst. Oh, this is a good one. 708. The worst is when your dad constantly downplays all your life problems. Because it was harder in his day. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
That sucks.
All dads do that, right?
They do, yeah. Yeah. That's a dad thing to do. I think that's kind of an imperative to, you have to, if you're a dad, one of the things you take on the dad test is whether or not you can complain about how things were tougher at your time. Right?
Yeah. Right.
All right.
You got it so easy, kid.
773 says the last hour of the cookout. Ooh, that's good. Food is cold. Everything's picked over. Everyone's drunk, and the annoying relative just won't leave.
Hmm.
I've been that relative.
I don't mind the cold food so much because at that point you're like 7-8 beers deep. So.
Yeah, right. But what if you just got there? If you're like the last one, and you were sober still.
Just don't bother going at that point.
At that point, you just got to turn yeah. around.
Wait right. till next year.
Go through Wendy's.
Yeah.
All right. The worst. Is dreaming of Blackhawk convention tickets on a crappy old drool-encrusted pillow.
That guy really wants those tickets.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing, yeah. This is an interesting. 262 says, the worst is when the village puts this big, ugly, reflective sign with your address on it in the middle of your yard while you're sleeping.
What kind of village do you live
in? I was going to say, that's more like a camp than a village. Right? That's no good. Oh, man. 815 says, when my girlfriend's parents didn't teach her how to drive, so I'm stuck teaching her. She's now 20. So he's 22. She's 20.
Just be happy you have a 20-year-old girlfriend, pal.
The worst, 847, I agree with this one. The worst is having pre-assigned seats for a great movie, only to have an unwashed, very large man take the seat next to you. P.U. my question to that, and this really grates on me. This grinds my gears. Was it a packed movie theater? Like, is every seat taken? Because if it's not, and you're in pre-assigned, and somebody sits next to you, that person has a has a mental block in how this is supposed to work.
Right.
It's like urinals. You don't pee next to the open. If there's a urinal open,
you want a gap.
You gap.
You gap.
It's the same at the pre-assigned movie theater. You don't sit next to somebody. What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
What you start doing that, then all bets are off.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I was recently at a quiet little bar having a beer, and then a Tinder date walked in and sat next to me.
Your Tinder date?
An obvious Tinder date sat next to me. I'm just trying to have a beer, and it's just nothing but awkward Tinder date conversation next to me.
Yeah, that sounds and there were, good.
Two people came in on a Tinder date and sat next to me at the bar.
I thought you said like a lost
no.
Tinder date. She couldn't find, I'll sit with this guy. No, so they did. Oh, that's the the worst.
It was the worst.
That sounds awful.
You're like, I don't want anything to do with your small talk. It's a quiet bar. The worst. That's got to be the worst.
Yeah, like my local tap. Overhearing a Tinder date.
A Tinder date.
Yeah, it's the worst.
All right, Blake, what do you got? You got another one?
Yeah, there's another barbecue one. It's all that's on my mind still.
Yeah.
But when you meet people at barbecues and people want to talk about their job for more than two sentences without you asking a question, it's like, good. I'll give you the two sentences and then wait for me to be interested before you keep talking about it. And
there
if I'm not interested, let me go.
There needs to be there needs to be a follow-up.
Right.
Yeah.
You get two sentences to say what you do and what you think.
Sure.
And then if Blake does not respond...
Yeah,
stop talking.
You don't get to go on with your story.
I'll probably change the subject unless they have some really interesting job, which, you know.
You don't get to ask your own question.
Right.
Is it hard? Yeah, it's hard.
Right.
Do I like it? Nah, I don't really like it. Right. That's terrible. You're right.
Yeah.
I can't stand it.
This is becoming like a really good, like, get off the chest etiquette.
Yeah.
The worst.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
All right, Mike, what do you got?
Well, I mean, this time of year, very popular for like women to call it wedding season or something. being 6'4" and big guy, I call it moving season because every weekend I get a text message from an acquaintance. Hey, I'm moving. You want to come help me move, big guy? Hey, big guy, I'll buy you some beer and pizza.
No way, man.
No, I don't want to help you move. Moving's the worst. We all know that.
Why would Well, there's the old... there's the old adage that says you cannot ask a friend to move after 30. Right?
Oh,
if you're after 30 years old, you're out of the game. So maybe you're just coming in.
Yeah, I'm 32, so maybe.
Yeah, well, then that's... No, it's bogus.
It's
man.
Bogus,
they can't
yeah.
be asking a 32-year-old to help you move.
No.
At 30, you need to put funds aside.
Yeah.
Right?
You've got to protect this back.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big back.
It's a big back. I only got one of them.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll continue with the worst here on the download. Stay with us. You know, on the worst, we always get the meta text, the ones that are always referencing. So there's good ones. The worst is when I take the time to write a text and it's never read. That's one that just came in. There's a lot about the worst is when I don't have a wallet and I lose my card. Making fun of Pete. It's too bad, Pete. Sorry. And then there's always the ones that are like, the worst is when I don't win the prize. Those are usually. And then the fourth kind, which I don't always read, is the ones that are bathroom humor.
Yeah.
You start to, about halfway through the worst, you start to get every text is like, oh, I was running to the bath. The worst is when you're running to the bath. All right. Okay.
The worst starts to go down the toilet.
Yeah. We get it. It's going down. Y'all. Playing the worst here on the download, 720 WGN Radio. Mike Makings and Blake Burkhart in studio with me tonight. 312-981-7200. We are complaining about all of the worst things in society for prizes. And we got great prizes tonight. We've got a My Pillow, so you can win a pillow. Top that.
Radio. Made in America.
Top that. Commercial music radio station with your six packs of Pepsi and your summer bash tickets. We're giving away a pillow. Also, a pair of tickets to Air Supply with Blood, Sweat, and Tears on July 16th at River Edge Park in Aurora. And then first place going to get you a pair of tickets to 9th Annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton. Come on. That's great.
That's going to be great.
Come
that's
on.
Awesome.
That's great, isn't
that's
it?
That's awesome.
It's awesome. So awesome. 312-981-7200. Pete Zimmerman, you got another one for us? You want to start us off second half?
You know what the worst? You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
The Facebook algorithm.
Yeah, right?
Why do I have to feel bad about not liking your sunset photo from Michigan on Sunday on Tuesday? I'm seeing tons of things.
Yeah, you're seeing anyone who's showing like today. There's like shots of people with their flags and fireworks. And you're like, no.
Yeah,
What? No. This was for yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Why is it showing up now?
Right. Someone should be fired at Facebook. Your algorithm is just no good.
It's the worst.
It's the worst.
It's the worst.
All right. Blake, what do you got?
Back to fireworks. I'll never understand the ones that just make a loud noise.
Yeah, right?
There's no visual element to it. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, a firework can be a beautiful thing. It's kind of cool. It's one time a year you see them for like a week or whatever, and then they go away. But just a loud bang, it's like a pleasant sight with like a little whistle, fine. But just like a loud noise for no reason. Yeah. Why? Why? Those shouldn't be called fireworks. They should be called something else.
Sound bombs.
Sound bombs. Sound bombs. Perfect.
I agree. Yeah. Wholeheartedly. Every time I see it, it's like kaboom. And you're like, all right, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, who is that fun for?
Yeah.
Just hurts your ears. Who enjoys that?
You can feel it in your chest sometimes. Yeah. Too, that scares me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like a firework without visuals, right. Just sound, to make you sort of relate to Iraq. You know, like where you're like, oh, that's automatically, you're like, this must be what it's be. To live in a war-torn area of the world.
Thanks for these unpleasant feelings.
Yeah, a happy Independence Day. You know, like maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Mike, what do you got?
Well, this actually happened to a friend of mine. So it's the worst. When he told me, I immediately knew it was the worst. He went home to visit his family, and got bored after a few days there. So he found himself at a gentleman's club.
Sure.
But then when he exited. The family car that he brought wouldn't start.
Oh.
So he had to call his mom to come pick him up from, you know, Visions or whatever the place was called.
Hey, Mom, at Visions again.
Just at this bar called Visions.
That is the worst.
Yeah.
Car not starting overall is the worst, but adding that to the parking
adding
lot,
adding a layer of
where they're like, you got to go, you can't keep it here.
Yeah.
No, I got to get a tow truck. My mom's coming to get me. No, that's not a good excuse. You got to go. Oh, that's terrible. All right, 312-981-7200. The worst is going on the Wendella for the fireworks and getting stuck on there for an hour and a half after no good reason. I shouldn't even have read that one because it just seems like. That's more of a better business thing than a worst. You know what I mean? Like, that's what Yelp is for, or Facebook.
Right.
The worst is going on Yelp at all.
At all.
The worst is going on Facebook to write a review of something. Right. I don't think I've ever done that in my life where I'm like, oh, I'm going to, you know what? I had a bad, you know, I don't think I would do that. Let's see. The worst is gluten-free pool noodles. What a ripoff. That's a joke. Get it? Pool noodles, you know, like the pool noodles. They're not real food, but they're almost because of noodles. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I didn't know we were trying out jokes. The worst is when they try out jokes. No, it's good. All right. The worst, 224 says, the worst is when you match with somebody on Tinder and they ghost you for no apparent reason.
Oh, sorry, bro.
So what does that mean? So does that mean that they ghost you entirely? Like you're like you start to chat.
They can unmatch you, flat out unmatch you, and then bye bye.
So they're
but I don't know if they stayed matched and then now she's just not responding.
That's probably what's happening.
But he was probably too aggressive based on that comment. She probably
or it's
had
the other way
right
around. This could be
him.
A woman who's like, no.
I mean, isn't that just like dating overall? Sometimes people just don't call you back.
Yeah.
Get over with. That's not the worst. Come on.
That's right. That's not the worst.
Yeah.
That's actually probably good.
It's a bad feeling, but come on.
Yeah.
You should go through that like 100 times.
Listen, 224, we've all felt it. We're with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel better.
Hang in there.
I mean, you just matched her on a cell phone. Like, it's not like you had a real emotional bond with this woman.
That's a great point.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about it.
I put in the tiniest bit of effort. Yeah. I didn't get a great result.
I think that's another good one for debatable. Let's get back in there and see what emotional toll this is.
It's debatable.
It's debatable. All right. 262 says, the worst is when you're invited for a nice dinner at a coworker's in-laws and his sister-in-law sits a little too close. Wow.
There's a lot of characters in this one.
I don't know who that person is.
It's just turned into like a word problem, like a math problem. Yeah. This train going 60 miles per hour. A dinner at co-worker's in-laws. Okay. So the co-worker's married, so this would be their parents. And then the sister-in-law, which would be the brother's
so
So you
wife?
Just wind up talking
it's the
to someone
coworker's
that you don't
spouse's
well.
Family.
Yeah, it's the coworker's spouse's family.
And then her,
and her
brother's wife.
Right. Sat too close.
I'd love it if the wife is listening now and she's like, that sounds like it's about me.
This is, wait, am I the sister-in-law to the coworker? To the
she's like, wait a minute. My Jeff oh, came man. And he's
this is a brain teaser. This is silly.
The
Sally
worst is
territory.
Just trying to decipher who that person is.
Yeah. Wow, that was pretty great. 773 says the worst is when people set up their chairs like five people back on the lawns at movies in the park or at music in the parks. Five people back. Do they mean like five
rows?
Five rows back?
I don't know.
That's I know there's some worst in that.
Yeah.
Because that's an etiquette issue where
there's
every
definitely
time you're
some
there,
bad etiquette at movies in the park.
Oh, or like when you go to an outdoor festival and they bring like the Last Supper worth of food and drink and set up the table and everything. That just drives me crazy. I'm like, you couldn't get a bag of pita chips?
Yeah.
Right.
We can all put our hands into pita chips and also like have some plastic wine. Glasses and the bag of wine. You know what I mean? Like, that's old school.
Eating away your sadness at the Blues Fest.
Uh, 708. The worst is being a newlywed and having all your friends and family ask you when you're going to get pregnant. Yes.
Oh, that's bad.
That's bad. That's
leave me alone.
Leave me alone. First off, leave me alone. Right? Second, what do you care?
What do you care?
Right.
Are you invested in this? Even as like a grandparent who would have minor investment in it. What do you care? Calm down.
Yeah.
I mean, did they get married at 50? Is she 50? And they're like, okay, you have 6 months to figure out what you want to do. Right? I never liked that. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. 773 wants to know what's a Tinder date.
You don't want to know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. You're better off without it. Yeah. You'll just get ghosted.
630 says the people who come in 2 minutes before close are the worst.
Yeah, good service industry.
Mm-hmm. We get a lot of that.
A lot of that.
There was one.
They deal
one,
with the
I
worst.
Think there's one that won last week or the week before about like the putting the fingers in the cup. What was that? Like, oh man, it's gross. It was something that someone. Oh, I can't remember what it was, but. This is a front runner right here. 214. Here's the worst. Footnotes. It's true. Absolutely true.
I do appreciate simplicity, you know.
No, I like that. That's a winner for me.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
That's at least a pillow right there.
The internet doesn't use footnotes. Books got to catch up.
Right.
You know what I mean? They just got to fly without a net. That's essentially get rid of the footnote. I don't care where it's from. Everything I read to be truth. So, you know what? Just make sure it's true.
I'm with that, too.
All right, let's go to Mark. Mark, what's the worst? You there, Mark?
No, I'm Mike.
Oh, Mike. I'm sorry, Mike. Sorry, I got you.
Oh,
Mark.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, what's the worst?
The worst I have is when you start a sentence and so.
And so.
And then they continue on with it, movie stars. President and candidates and all of them.
And so there
and
I was.
So and then finished.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks, Mike. That's good.
But that hurts me.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. And so I went to the store, right? Great. You're continuing your life story. That's great that you're continuing your life story. 620, and this isn't referencing Mike at all because I screwed up his name. But I think 620 is referencing to earlier. The worst when callers aren't ready to be on the air when the host goes through.
Yeah. Little lag time there.
Yeah. But that was not his fault because that was my fault because it says Mark and I read Mark. Should have said Mike. The worst is when you get to get change from the corner store and the bus for the bus and you come out just as the bus rolls by.
Yeah. That's bad.
There's probably no more rage inducing moment. When you feel like you're wronged by the CTA.
Oh, yeah. Or when you've been waiting for 15 minutes and see three go by on the other side of the street.
Mm-hmm. That's a wrong.
Can't we space this? Right. One of those should turn around.
I honestly feel like there's nothing more like rage-inducing. If you feel like you're wronged as a person by mass transit, yeah. you really, like, that's the one thing where you're like, you feel like the world's against you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're at a bus stop right out here on Michigan Avenue, you're like, oh, here comes the bus. I've been waiting. And that bus, like,
looks you right in the eye and keeps rolling, that's when you're like, yeah. He turns into a Rage Against the Machine song.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You get those ones on the L, you're waiting, like especially like at night, yep, when we leave, you know, you're waiting for a long time, and all of a sudden you see the lights and like, oh, this is great, finally, and then not in service. You know, yep, zips right by.
This train is running express.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Or how about when you're on the train and then they just go, we're running express all the way to Clark and Lake, and then it'll give you a chance to get off, and yeah, you needed to get off at like Belmont. Then you got to get on the train going the other way.
All of these are great examples of being wronged.
Wronged by the CTA.
When you are wronged by mass transit in general. The airport, too, you know, that's mass transit.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever you feel like you personally have been wronged, it just it clicks something where you're like, this will not stand. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll read the rest of them we've got, and then give away some prizes. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst here. 312-981-7200. Susan, what's the worst, Susan?
You're waiting at Belmont to go north on a Brown Line,
uh-huh,
and by mistake you grab an Evanston Express.
I know exactly what you were going to say. When you said north, the worst is when you're on northbound, I'm like, Purple Line. Yep, I've done that. Then you got to go all the way to Howard, right?
Right.
That is the worst. But the good news now, I feel like I did that 5 times before cell phones. At least with your cell phone now,
you can track them a little
you
bit.
You can just check Facebook while you're stuck on that train.
Yeah.
Because it's above ground. Back in my day, Susan, you would have to just sit there.
Just look at the other riders.
Yeah, look out the window at all the porches.
But if you're going to work, you're really going to be late.
Yeah, that's true if you're going to work.
All right, well, thanks.
Thanks, Susan. All right, let's go back to the, but she's right. That's getting on the wrong train.
Yeah.
I think I told Pete this story one time. My buddy Adam, it was a Halloween party up in Morse at the old Morseland. He gets on the red line to go south, falls asleep, ends up at 95th Street.
Oof.
Right? Goes all the way back. He was only going 2 stops to Addison. Sleeps it all the way back to Howard.
Howard.
And then comes back. And in the process, got his wallet cut out of his pants.
Yeah.
Like he was that
yeah,
passed out that somebody went underneath the seat and cut knife, the lining,
knifed yeah,
the lining and
that's
pulled
happened
it out.
To my friend, yeah.
Wow.
What's going on?
You remember Kyle Casey? That happened yeah, to Kyle Casey.
Oh, gosh.
Scary.
Kyle, come on, Kyle.
Come on, Kyle. Take care of yourself.
Together. You should not be that loaded on a train.
This was years ago. This
all right.
Years ago.
Yeah. Then it's acceptable. Yeah. Sorry, years ago is a different. You drink more and pass out more. All right. The worst is when you make a chore schedule for your family and you get back from vacation and realize it's your week to do the dishes. That is true. All right. This one, I like this one a lot. This one was sent earlier. Having 2 kids in camp. They're 312. Having 2 kids in camp and washing towels and bathing suits every single day is the worst. Yes, that is the worst. I know you guys don't have kids, but I'm telling you, Blake, I'm telling you, Mike, the idea that you are in camp and you have to go swimming, you got to clean that. And the idea that it's every day, how do you keep up? I don't understand how society has not adjusted to camp swimming trunks. There should be disposable or something.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. That one, that hits close to home.
Yeah, that's where I would consider just buying 20 swimsuits right, for my kid.
That's why they should
new
be like
one every
three,
day, buddy.
Yeah, they should be like $3, but they're not. They're like $14.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is, it's $15 a day. So you're dropping $100. That's no good. the worst is, this is weird. 224. The worst is having to leave 5 minutes before your name is pulled for an around the world trip for two when the winner needed to be present.
Oh. Did that happen to that guy? That's terrible.
Oh, no.
Are you guys thinking what I'm thinking? I might have to replace one of our top three with that one there.
That's pretty bad.
That's bad.
That's good, yeah.
That's bad.
That's good. That happened to, my buddy Nick, we were at a bar and they were giving away Bears playoff tickets and he was too drunk and there was a raffle that you had to be there and he left.
Oh,
and I couldn't believe it when they called his name. I was so mad.
Why'd you say, you couldn't say
I should have. I should have just gone up and said, I'm Nick.
Right.
But I didn't think that quickly.
Okay, there's a lot more. I mean, it's such good. Some real serious ones here at the end. Sequels. 312. Sequels are the worst. All right.
Usually that's true.
Usually.
The worst is getting invited in. Come on, this one's terrible. I don't even read this stuff. 708. The worst is getting invited in after the first date, and then she has cockroaches.
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
The worst construction pretty much all the way. But I would say this. You know what? You're not living with her.
Right.
You know, it's just a kind of a...
Well, and is it her specific apartment or the building? Because if the building's got them, there's nothing you can do.
That's right. So, you know, the more I'm just kind of... We're kind of pulling back the worst. I'd say it's not the worst.
It's debatable.
It's debatable.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I may change one of them here. I really like this.
I think so.
Yeah. Don't you? This one here is going to go in.
Give that guy a pillow.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's give away the top three here tonight here on the download. I think I might have enough to give four. I'm just going to look at this thing. All right. So third place, as we said, is a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com. Second place is going to be a pair of tickets to Air Supply with Blood, Sweat, and Tears on July 16th at River Edge Park in Aurora. Hear the hits of the 60s, 70s, and 80s that were the soundtrack to your favorite moments. Get tickets online at RiverEdgeAurora.com or call 630-896-6666. And first place is going to get you a pair of tickets to the 9th Annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel on July 15th through July 17th. Are we ready? Third place, we have a tie.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to give away two pillows.
You giving away two pillows?
Yeah.
You're feeling generous tonight, aren't you?
You know what? I just feel like that's
very nice.
312's having two kids in camp and washing towels and bathing suits every single day is the worst. I have to. I'm with you. For all the people who have two kids in camp, swim trunks, society has not caught up to that pain.
I would have given that one first place, Justin.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
Wow.
Martyr, yeah. See? Thank you, buddy. That's that's exactly what when I saw that, I'm like, I know that pain. And there needs to be more. And that is tied with third place, which is the worst, having to leave 5 minutes before your name is pulled for an around-the-world trip for two when the winner needed to be present. The reason that's third place and not automatically first place is we can't verify it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those where you're like, yeah, it could have happened, could not, but you're going to get a MyPillow for that pain.
At least you're going to sleep well.
All right, second place, and this is another one that is close to home for a lot of people who are newlyweds. Second place, you can go to Air Supply with Blood, Sweat, and Tears when no one's going to bother you there. The worst is being a newlywed and having all your friends and family ask when you're going to get pregnant. Who cares? Back off, right?
It's my life.
It's my life.
I'm going to go see Air Supply.
Do I need to send you the Bon Jovi song, It's My Life? Yeah. We understand it.
Air Supply concert, though, may be a good place to get pregnant. Just saying.
At the concert?
Too much of a stretch? Right after? I don't know. They got soothing
maybe
music.
2 days later.
Yeah.
When they're recounting all the great memories from the songs. Oh, my God. You remember that Air Supply song?
Yeah.
All right. And first place from 214, the worst. Footnotes.
Boom.
Boom. You're going to the Blackhawks convention for that one.
Sweet. Yeah.
Good work. Good work. All right. Blake Burkhart is at Comedians You Should Know. It's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock at Timothy O'Toole, 622 North Fairbanks, comediansyoushouldknow.com. You can also check him out at Endorka's Comedy Review every second Friday at 8 o'clock at Endorka's in Pilsen. Mike Makings is hosting at the Comedy Bar, the open mic, which is every Wednesday, and he's also got a couple of dates in July where he's going to be hosting on the weekends.
Last weekend of July.
There you go. Mike, Blake, thanks so much for being in, guys.
All right, man. Thank you. Yeah.
That's going to do it tonight for the download. Coming up next, Patty Vasquez. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. The worst is when you're in a closed-door meeting with the boss who tells you always think you're the smartest guy in the room. And you respond, because I usually am. And then you realize it's just you and the boss in the office. So dumb.
Oops.
Oops.
Oops. Was that my outside voice?
Lots of good stuff tonight. I will get. Someone just said the worst was those picks for the winners, but I'm like, I don't think so, man. You have not gone through the seven circles of hell when you have a kid in camp, not to mention two.
Oh, the sunscreen alone is brutal.
It's true.
I mean, I buy the crap by the gross. I go through the whole damn thing in 1 week.
All right, coming up tomorrow, Martin Starr is going to be on the show. We're excited for that. Martin Starr from Silicon Valley.
Cool.
Also from Freaks and Geeks. That'll be a good show to have him. Also, Greg Hall from Goose Island. Virtue Cider will be here as well.